WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking with our good friend Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future about his piece, Blaming Social Security for Deficits is Like Blaming Iraq for 9/11. Well, wait a minute. Isn't that what they did? Isn't that what the Bush people did? Yeah. And what he talks about is all these crises that the Republicans create, all of these fires that the conservatives start, they come with solutions that harm you and me, make you and I put the fire out at our expense. And they walk away quite merrily with the goods. Should be an interesting conversation. Also in the second hour, Rick Kepler, Teamster organizer from Cleveland, is going to be here talking about what's going on in Ohio and the video that the T-Twizzlers tried to put out. This is kind of making him famous because he was honest, he was blunt, he was to the point. He said, look, I would think you guys would be with us because this is a government overreach. And you know what? They put this up on their tubes. They put it up on their websites. See, look, we got them. You got them telling the truth. Shows kind of how twisted the T-Twizzlers really are. Also, if you want to see the video for yourself, you can go to thericksmithshow.com and click on Rick Kepler's name. It'll take you right there. And in the third hour, we're going to talk with Paul Secunda, associate professor at Marquette University. He's a law professor out there. Who's been on the ground in Madison. We're going to talk about some of the legal ramifications, some of the stuff going on there. Your calls, of course, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-522-7425. I got to tell you, I'm having one of those moments. I kind of know what that woman in Los Angeles was feeling like for a second there, who they thought had a stroke on air. My tongue just didn't want to work there for a second. Anyway, your calls to 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Of course, I heard a bunch of people, and this is kind of one of these things that grabbed me, a bunch of folks wondering why the firefighters got involved in Wisconsin when the governor himself explicitly said that they were safe, they were out of it. We're not going after you, you're okay. Right from the beginning, Scott Walker excluded the cops and the firefighters. And to be honest, excluding them, excluding the police and the firefighters, politically, pretty smart. Pretty smart for a couple of reasons. One, because in general, the cops and firefighters are a little more Republican-friendly, a little more conservative, if you will, because, you know, they're the law and order people. They're the folks who, you know, a little more heavy-handed, generally. Secondly, and most importantly, Walker was trying to divide the labor movement. Thought that if he can get these union members over here feeling okay, not being involved, we'll just divide them off and go after them in bits and pieces. It didn't work because as we've heard the stories of firemen joining the protesters, walking in their uniforms, in their garb down the street, shaking hands. We've seen stories of the cops bringing sandwiches and water to the protesters. So it's not working, Scott. Sorry there, Cheese Pharaoh. It just is not working. And you ask the question, you know, why, if they're not wearing the bullseye, if they don't have the target on their back, why would the firefighters risk getting caught in this mess? You know, other than the fact that they're in the shark tank as well. Understand, all union members, all working people are in this big giant shark tank. And the greed shark is eating us one by one. They've gone after most of the private sector. The majority of the private sector has been eaten up. Now you're going after the public sector workers. So it's their turn. And eventually I think the firefighters know and the policemen know. It's going to be their turn. Now understand, on this day back in 1918, another one of these labor history moments, the International Association of Firefighters was formed. And you ask the question, well, why is that important? Back then, the average work week was 84 hours a week. They worked 24-hour shifts. They were paid 29 cents an hour. That's why. And I go back to what we talked about last night. It's wages, hours, conditions. That's why people join unions. That's why people come together. That's the reason they collectively bargain. Wages, hours, conditions. Why do you think Scott Walker would want to take those rights to bargain for wages, hours, conditions? Why do you think he'd want that? Well, because he doesn't want to pay him. He wants to be able to work him to death under any condition he chooses. Fairly dictatorial, if you ask me. And these firefighters understand that. These workers understand it. And these young people who are marching in the streets, they understand it. And it's about the future of this country. If we allow this to go down, if we allow this to happen, who's next? You? Me? Yeah. And the big money's pushing behind this. So the T-Twits, they're going to get on their buses. They're going to Madison next week. As are we. And interestingly enough, you know, it's kind of funny how history kind of brings up these little things. Today, back in 1856, the Know Nothing Party convened in Philadelphia to nominate its very first presidential candidate. And I think of the T-Twizzlers, and I read this from history.com. They say the Know-Nothing movement began in the 1940s when an increasing rate of immigration led to the formation of a number of so-called nativist societies to combat foreign influences in American society. Does that sound familiar to you? He goes on to say Roman Catholic immigrants from Ireland and Italy who were embraced by the Democratic Party in eastern cities were especially targeted. In the early 1850s, several secret nativist societies were formed, of which the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner and the Order of United Americans were the most significant. Boy, what nice names. The Order of the Star-Spangled Banner. The Order of United Americans. Wow. Kind of makes you think of Freedom Works. Americans for Prosperity. It's amazing how nothing seems to change. It goes on to say when members of these organizations were questioned by the press about their political platforms, they would often respond that they knew nothing, hence the popular name, the Know-Nothings. In 1954, the Know-Nothings allied themselves with a faction of Whigs and ran for office in several states, calling for legislation to prevent immigrants from holding public office. By 1855, support for the Know-Nothings had expanded considerably, and the American Party was officially formed. In that same year, however, Southerners in the party sought to adopt a resolution calling for the protection of slavery, and some anti-slavery Know-Nothings defected and formed You got it, the Republican Party. So today, 1856, the American Party met to nominate its first presidential candidate and to formally abolish its secret character of the organization. Former President Millard Fillmore of New York was chosen with Andrew Donaldson of Tennessee to serve as his running mate. You know, you go back and you think about this stuff. It's amazing how, you know, the names change. It's like Dragnet. You know, the names have changed, but it's the same story over and over and over again. And we are going to Wisconsin. We're going to be there Sunday. We're going to do our program next week from there. We look forward to your input. We're going to be, as one of our Facebook friends said, tweeting like an Egyptian. So that you're gonna know what's going on, when it's going on, and we look forward and we're excited as all can be, because I understand the T-Twizzler buses will be rolling in, so it'll be interesting to see how this works. For me, I gotta be honest, you go back to this, and I've said this a number of times, I don't think this would have hit any of the magnitude. It wouldn't hit the magnitude that it has gotten to had Scott Walker not done probably the dumbest thing in politics and say he was going to call out the National Guard. Because as Stephanie Taylor over at Salon points out, this would be the first time in 80 years that the National Guard would be used to break a strike by Wisconsin workers, and the first time in over 40 years that the National Guard would be used against public workers anywhere in the country. And of course, we all know the last time the National Guard was called out was during the sanitation strike in Memphis back in 1968, just before Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. But as she points out, to understand the visceral emotional nature of this threat, you've got to understand the history of the National Guard and the labor movement. You've got to understand that there's been this relationship between labor and the state. And she points out that during the 1800s and early 1900s, governors often mobilized the National Guard during strikes. Sometimes they were the people who were in the middle. They were just, you know, the peacekeepers, kind of keep everybody apart so that there wasn't violence. But for the other times, they were there to break the strikes. They were there to crack heads. They were there to be the strong arm of the law. They were there to, you know, to break into buildings and throw people out. And you go across the country, Buffalo, New York, Birmingham, Alabama, Salt Lake City, Colorado, you name. And she points out that just a two-year span, 1911 to 1913, the militia, National Guard, the armed force of the state governments, were mobilized against coal miners in West Virginia, textile workers in Massachusetts, textile workers in New Jersey, and copper mines in Michigan. She points out that during an infamous bloodbath in 1914, soldiers killed six miners and injured, killed six miners, two women and 12 children in the massacre of Ludlow. Something we don't often learn about in schools. She goes on to point out that during the 1934 auto light strike, which was a big deal at the time, there was a battle that raged for 5 days. Thousands of strikers, thousands of Ohio National Guardsmen battled for days. And at the end of it, there were dead strikers and injured people. And you go back and you look at all of this and you go, you know, why is this? Why is this important? Are we ready? Is this what we want to go back to? Do we want to go back to this time? Then there's the other side of this that's worth thinking about and worth talking about. Consider the fact that workers now find themselves kind of in the same situations they did back then with regard to income inequality and a lack of voice on the job. This is what this situation's about, folks. This is not about these workers refusing to sacrifice. That's not it. They've sacrificed. They're willing to sacrifice more. This is about having their rights and their voice stolen in broad daylight. This is about being hijacked in broad daylight. And sadly, like the know-nothings of 1856, the fearful of others, the mindless self-absorbed, the blind minions marching to the drum of their corporate masters will be used as the thugs, the skullcracker, the disposable to enrich the few and to work toward the goals of the multi-rich over that of the multitudes. That's what this is about. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future. We're back after this. Drowning in craft and lies. Save the USA and resume the size of mine. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job and join.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Tens of thousands of Wisconsinites from all walks of working life continue to storm the state capitol in ever-escalating protests against a Republican effort to end collective bargaining rights for public workers. For days, they have packed the three-story Capitol building and rallied in the state capitol square, some even sleeping overnight in the Capitol Rotunda. Madison Firefighters Local 311 President Joe Conway expressed his solidarity from the state capitol steps Thursday.
When Scott Walker drew that line and tried to separate out labor from the firefighters and the police officers, we knew what we had to do. Whenever a line is drawn, we are on the side of all of labor.
Republicans in the state Senate couldn't vote to kill collective bargaining rights Thursday because Democratic senators went to Illinois, preventing a quorum required for the vote. Protesters in the rotunda cheered at the news. Mary Newton is a teacher from Janesville, Wisconsin.
Came in today and supported us. I cried. I'm so glad. I emailed Tim Cullen because he led the Democrats out, and they're in Illinois right now, which is not too far away, and so they can't vote. I just can't understand why this is a budget issue. It's not a budget issue. It's about taking away our rights.
Teachers have shut down schools to protest the attack on collective bargaining rights. Wisconsin's capital continues to reverberate with the sound and fury of workers and students united. Wisconsin Democratic State Senator Chris Larson says Democrats have no intention of coming back to the Capitol until Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker listens to the people on his elimination of collective bargaining rights for public workers.
Until they're willing to listen to the 25,000 people who are here today, the tens of thousands of people that were here yesterday and the day before and the day before, you know, until that happens, I don't think we're ready to go back to the table. When the Archbishop, the President of the United States, the Green Bay Packers, and 25,000 people plus are against you and want you to slow down, maybe you should slow down and not take away these people's rights.
New York City's Central Labor Council is in solidarity with Wisconsin's labor movement. The Labor Council in New York says it stands with their brothers and sisters in Wisconsin. The New York City Central Labor Council says workers everywhere will stand up together. Flight attendants on Thursday held a National Day of Action protesting the lack of a fair contract after 5 years of protracted negotiations at U.S. Airways. That airline just posted its second biggest profit ever, but it's pushing flight attendants for concessions. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, I look at this thing in Wisconsin, and I got to be honest, this is another situation that the right has created. This whole pension thing, this is their doing. And we're not talking about real solutions on how to fix it. We're just talking about who we can blame for it. Another example of the blame stream media going after the victim in all of this. Just amazing stuff. And our good friend Dave Johnson over at the Campaign for America's Future kind of wrote about this in his piece, Blaming Social Security for Deficits is Like Blaming Iraq for 9/11 and Unions in Wisconsin. Dave, thanks for taking time for me, buddy.
Well, thanks for having me on.
You know, I gotta take issue right away. Didn't Iraq cause 9/11? Wasn't Saddam Hussein at the planning meeting? Didn't he give them the seed money?
Yeah, you remember that? Remember how like a couple years after we invaded, people still thought that Iraq had done something to us on 9/11. Remember that?
Of course I remember. And I still have people who believe that, though, Dave.
I know. And some people are still trying to convince people of it. And, you know, it's like, but the fact is, Iraq didn't. It was more like, you know, we know now. They already wanted to invade Iraq, and they were just waiting for something to come along that they could use as a reason. And you see that happen all the time. And so that's what I wrote this post about. I was thinking about this. You know, the unions don't have anything to do with the budget problem in Wisconsin or anywhere else, you know, especially the employee unions or pensions and things like that. But they're getting blamed. And we all know what happened. I mean, Wall Street did what it did, and they cut taxes and all these other things. But they get people worked up, and then they've got these solutions that they try to put on.
Yeah, and the solution always ends up with me getting the short end of the stick. The solution always ends up with me getting screwed.
I know. It's like I've got this line in here. Isn't it funny how these crises keep coming up? People whipped into a panic over and over and over and over. And so right now people are whipped into a panic about the deficit crisis. And we're hearing, I mean, they didn't have a deficit crisis when they were making the deficit, you know, under Bush. But now we have a deficit crisis because they're trying to do things for people like you and me and working people. So all of a sudden there's this deficit crisis and we can't do that. But in the deficit crisis, they're saying, well, Social Security, we got to do something about Social Security because we have a deficit. Well, we talked about this before. Social Security, by law, can't borrow. It has nothing to do with the deficit.
Right.
But they've got a deficit problem. They've got people whipped up. And, you know, for how many years wanted to get rid of Social Security? So that comes up. Just like in Wisconsin, they have a budget problem that they caused. And let's blame unions. It's a good time. Let's see if we can get rid of public employee unions. You know, we see the same thing over and over. And I guess people be good if we recognize when it's happening to us. That's what I'm trying to say with this.
Absolutely. But here's the thing, Dave. I think there is a problem with Social Security. I absolutely believe that there is Social Security has to be dealt with.
Yeah.
I am paying too much of my income into Social Security, and Warren Buffett and David Tepper and Bill Gates are not paying enough.
That's right. People don't know that the Social Security tax is only on people who are in the lower and middle classes, and after you get to 100-something thousand, I think it's 106,000 now, you don't pay a tax anymore.
And it's only on income, only on work income.
And it's a flat tax, only on work. You don't pay it on dividends, you don't pay it on things. And if you're a contractor, you know, like so many more people are these days where you're not an employee, you pay 15%.
Yep.
And also it doesn't pay much after you retire. It doesn't pay very much. Here we are, you know, all these people, and they make you wait too long before you get it, but my bigger point here is they've got this whole list, you know, and it's always the same things. You know, I've got a quote at the start of this story, which is at ourfuture.org, by the way.
And we've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just
okay,
click on Dave Johnson's
name. Tom DeLay in 2003 said this: nothing is more important in the face of war than cutting taxes. Yeah. They always have the same solutions. Always, if you've got a crisis, then they say a tax cut will fix it, getting rid of unions will fix it, privatizing Social Security fix it, and gutting government solves everything. Doesn't even matter what the problem is. You know, when the economy's good, they say, oh, well, you can't raise taxes now that the economy's good. And when the economy's bad, they say, oh, well, you can't raise taxes with the economy bad. And the result of tax cuts is always that there's a deficit. And, of course, with a deficit, you always have to go after things that are for regular people, for working people.
Yep.
You know?
You know, here's the thing. They all want to be carpenters. But the only problem is their toolbox only has one tool in it, and that's a hammer.
Yeah.
They see everything as a nail. They don't realize that it actually takes some skill to build a house. It doesn't take but an idiot with a hammer to tear something down. And that's all they know. Destroy, destroy, destroy for you and me and reap the benefits for themselves.
And I'm thinking, you know, they always have so many words. They're good, you know. They always have all these reasons and all this, but it always comes down to the same thing, that you and I have to sacrifice so that more money can go to the top. And I'm wondering if the best solution is just to say, look, you always say tax cuts, you always say this, you always say that, and it's about time we don't listen to you guys anymore. I think, you know, sometimes it's just got to come down to that. You got to come to an understanding that these guys just say this stuff, and it's just stuff. You know, I mean, it's always tax cuts, it's always cut government, and it's always government is bad. And, you know, it's government is we the people. Government is us watching out for each other and helping each other fight these big corporations and people who want to prey on us like this.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Dave. And, you know, if you only have ever read one book in your life, all you know is what was in that one book. If all you've ever listened to in your whole life is Rush Limbaugh and right-wing hate sputum, that's all you know. If all you do is watch Glenn Beck on TV, that's all you know. In this country, you have a large segment of people who are not curious. They loved George Bush because basically he was an idiot, and he was one of them. They identified with him. Granted, he was about an inch deep. That's why they love Sarah Palin. The problem in this country is we don't have intellectually curious people who will critically think and dig through this stuff.
Well, wait, I remember before a certain point, there was a point when the broadcast networks and other publicly licensed things that use the public's things we own, like the airways, they were required to give out a certain amount of information from a broad viewpoint. So you didn't have a radio station that only had the right-wing viewpoint. It would have other shows, you know. Now, your show wouldn't be changed, but they'd say, look, you got to present the other side of the story
right. Once
in a while. And that used to be the law, and under Reagan that changed. So it wasn't always like this. It wasn't always that there were these propaganda stations where people only heard one thing. People were exposed to the other side of the story, you know. It wasn't the same it is now.
And that's the problem. I mean, we have, you know, in our own lives and in what we've been fed, we have, on ideological grounds, divided ourselves, and there is no middle discussion. I have some Tea Party friends who you cannot have any rational conversations with because all they know is their talking point.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, you hear Fox covering this. It's like, by the way, that before we run out of time, the teachers' unions in Bahrain, okay, are coming up against the government there. So I just wonder what Fox is going to say about that now, you know, the stuff that's happening in the Middle East. It's very similar to what we're seeing here, is people rising up and saying, look, we're just not going to listen to this stuff anymore. And they're showing up. Beautiful thing at the Capitol in Madison is so many people have shown up there.
Well, we're going to be there. We're going to be doing our broadcast there next week. We're leaving Sunday. We're going to get out there Sunday and do our broadcast Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from there at least. And depending on what happens in Ohio, maybe we'll swing through there as well. But you're right. And the thing that bothers me is I can watch what's going on in Bahrain, and I can get up-to-the-minute information. Our blame-stream media here in this country, I'm not getting that kind of coverage in Madison. In fact, for days, everybody ignored it.
That's right. That's right. And, well, you know, I've said for a long time, ever since that thing with Reagan and they started allowing corporations to buy up more and more stations and more, you know, own more and more of the media, you won't see a union person on almost any station explaining the benefits of joining a union. When's the last time you saw something like that?
And if you do see one union guy, you see four or five corporate guys beating up on him.
That's right. That's
right. And the thing is, you know, and the other part of this, and this is one of the things that I was always angry with Bill Clinton about. The telecom bill of 96 made it exponentially worse. Reagan had taken it so far, but Clinton, you know, Reagan opened the door, Clinton kicked it off the hinges, and allowed these big corporations to consolidate to the point to where you've got like six or seven, about six companies that control all the radio waves.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it's It's very hard to get alternative viewpoints now from the corporate viewpoint. It was like trying to find out about what was going on in Egypt for a while, and you couldn't get Al Jazeera anywhere. So people were watching it on the Internet. It had a huge following on the Internet, but you can't get Al Jazeera on a cable network.
Well, we don't want that Muslim stuff on our TV networks.
Right.
What's wrong
with
you,
not
boy?
A cable network, but a cable provider like Comcast.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
We don't want that Muslim stuff around here.
So they've got this grab bag of tricks that people should just recognize that they always just pop up with these things as answers to problems. But this is like really serious, trying to get rid of collective bargaining. That's pretty big. That's like, what do we have left if we get rid of collective bargaining? They make it illegal.
Let me ask you
this. Back to the 30s when it was illegal, and we'll have to make it legal again. You know?
So let me ask you a couple of quick questions.
Yeah.
Just yes or no. Will cutting Social Security create any jobs?
Of course not.
Will getting rid of unions create any jobs?
Of course not.
Will getting rid of the government create any jobs?
You're reading my post.
I absolutely am.
That's you know, all these things are happening, and then they never work. They're never really solutions, so problems just get worse. But what the people want and what the polls show, and even in Wisconsin, they've got some polls out now that show people are against what this governor is doing. People want jobs. You know, that's what people want, and none of this is creating any jobs.
Have the big, massive tax cuts created any jobs? All those Bush handouts, did that create any jobs?
You want to talk about jobs. Look at tax cuts and jobs. Clinton raised taxes. We had this great decade of great economy and jobs everywhere. It was great. Then Bush cut taxes, and we had the worst decade ever because they put these policies in place that just let everything float to the top and let corporations and such just dominate. And, you know, people say, oh, well, businesses create jobs. Well, actually, no, because if you think about it, in
customers
a business,
do. They
have every incentive in the world to kill every job they can, because when you get rid of a job, you know, they call it being more efficient.
Yep.
So they're always trying to pare things down and do things with fewer people. So don't, you know, it's always up to we the people through our government to force the situation where jobs are created and where things are better for us.
Have you been watching Washington, what's going on in Congress? Have you seen any bills by the Republicans, you know, the new resurgent Republican Party, you know, the ones who want to help the job creators? Have you seen any bills, any movement towards creating one single job?
No, nothing. There hasn't been anything about jobs in this Congress yet. Not a thing. They just voted to defund the Environmental Protection Agency. They voted to get rid of public radio, and there was that weird abortion bill where they said rape, the only definition of rape will now be forcible rape.
Yeah.
Nothing else counts. You know, one thing after another from this right-wing agenda, from
craziness.
Their grab bag of tricks. They got into office by promising jobs. They haven't done a thing about jobs. You're going to make me shout. I always get on your show and start shouting.
You're allowed. This is
okay.
I don't have it. They're shouting allowed here. Last thing I got then. Since the Republicans aren't interested in creating jobs, I guess the people at the Campaign for America's Future have a couple ideas. You got a summit coming up, a job summit on March 10th. We're planning on attending. Tell us a little bit about it.
Hey, I'll be there. I'll get to see you.
Good.
Say hi.
Excellent.
It's in Washington, D.C. It's free unless you want lunch. And then if you're going to get lunch there, I think it's $15, you know, for a few things. And so if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, or anywhere nearby, go to the ourfuture.org website. There's going to be quite a job agenda at this thing. We're going to be talking about how do we create a movement for jobs in this country to counter all this stuff we're hearing from this new Congress and things. We're just going to say it's time to talk about jobs, and we're going to say it's time to talk about jobs, and it's going to be a very interesting group of people at this thing.
I mean, I got to be honest, you know, in looking at what the Republicans are doing, it really amplifies the fact that they don't have a clue. They are completely clueless, void of any vision, void of any idea of what to do other than campaign.
Well, they're not about things like creating jobs. That's not what they're about. Like the defunding of the Environmental Protection Agency, what that's about is, you know, they're dancing with the ones that brung them. That's the Koch brothers, Koch, however you pronounce it, K-O-C-H, who own this giant oil company, billions of dollars, who fund the Tea Party. They created the Tea Party. They get these guys into office, and so now they're getting rid of the Environmental Protection Agency because the Environmental Protection Agency has been coming after the Koch brothers because they're polluters, because they're doing terrible, you know, they've been fined and fined and fined, and they want to stop that. So now they're dancing with the ones that brung them. More tax cuts for corporations. People don't know that Wisconsin, they're talking about getting rid of the unions because they're out of money. They need $45 million, I think it is, something like that. That's how much they're short. And they just passed a huge tax cut for corporations in Wisconsin. You know, yep. So it's like, just like here, they did tax cuts. Now they're talking about, oh my God, we got these deficits. We got to get things.
We're broke.
Working people. We got to get rid of them.
We're broke. We gave all the money away. We emptied the collection plate.
That was Boehner said that. We're broke.
Well, you know, hey, if all those people lose their jobs, so be it, Dave Johnson. Dave, I appreciate your time, buddy. Ourfutures.org is the website. There's a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Dave Johnson's name. Dave, always great to talk to you. Look forward to talking to you very soon.
And if Rick Smith's going to be at this conference on March 10th, everybody ought to come.
That's right. That's right. I'll see you March 10th, Dave.
Good.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
It's always interesting to see Congress in action, though interesting can also be appalling. For example, what a sight it was to watch the new Republican leaders as they gleefully repealed last year's law extending health care coverage to all Americans. As they voted one by one to kill it, their mantra was, no to big government health care. What you couldn't see, however, was them later slipping down the hallways of the Capitol to a little-known exclusive medical office that gives them free health care, paid for by the same big government they were just ranting about. You might think that such raw hypocrisy would cause them to feel at least a twinge of moral discomfort, but apparently they've been immunized to prevent such outbreaks of morality. A good illustration of the congressional mindset is presently making the rounds on the Internet. Called The Haircut, it tells the story of a barber who cut the hair of a florist, but refused to take payment from the flower peddler. "I'm doing community service this week," he explained. The next morning, when the barber went to his shop, he found a thank you note and a dozen roses at his door. His next customer was a police officer needing a trim. Again, the barber declined any payment. The next morning, he found a thank you note and a dozen donuts waiting for him, a gift from the grateful cop. Then, lo and behold, a congressman came in for a haircut. When he tried to pay, the barber once more waved off the money, repeating his commitment to community service. The lawmaker was delighted by this generous gesture. And sure enough, when the barber went to his shop the next morning, he was greeted by another surprise. A dozen Congress critters lined up waiting for a free haircut. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, it's just a matter of one's moral makeup. Assuming, of course, that you have a moral makeup.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, right there is the place to download our podcast. Very popular. Again, if you want to contact us as well, rick@thericksmithshow.com, we do appreciate your input. You know, I look at this whole scenario, and the right wing media has really grabbed on to this idea, this false mean that these public sector workers, these teachers, these plow drivers, these state workers, they just have too generous pensions. All this stuff is too generous. And I was watching David Brooks this morning, and he said the reality is for too long, governors didn't want to give people raises, so they just kept giving them better and better pensions. Figuring, you know what, the stock market was doing great. Our pensions were, 120, 150% funded. So down the road, everything will be fine. We don't have to budget for these pay increases. And the workers said, you know what, we'll sacrifice these pay increases so because we're going to have something when we retire. And this is the thing that the right-wing media wants you to forget, wants you to not know that these benefits are part of their wage package, just like they are yours, just like they are mine. The problem is, and this is the problem that I think most people don't see, these state workers, they don't make as much as the private sector, and study after study has shown that, given their educational level. The guy we know who works in the for the nuclear plant, very educated, very intelligent guy, lots of schooling. Should he make as much as a guy driving a truck? Or should he make more? I mean, if you really want to get into this argument, the vast majority of state workers that I know, they make under $30,000 a year. But it's that pension, it's that health care that keeps them. So they've taken lower wages for better benefits. The problem is, in the private sector, everybody wanted the money in their pocket. And now that these companies have seen an opportunity to grab us by the short hairs and squeeze, now people are getting upset about it. I know a lot of people have taken pay cuts in this whole ordeal. And what the right has grabbed onto, Jake, is this false idea that these elite workers, these greedy workers in Wisconsin, they don't want to take a pay cut. Here's the reality, folks. They've already taken major concessions. And it's not that they're not willing to take more concessions. They want to sit down at the bargaining table and negotiate. This governor wants none of that. He wants to dictate an edict from the mount that they have no choice to take, which is why he's going after their collective bargaining rights, which is why he's going after their voice. If he can rip their tongue out like the mob used to do in the old days, you can't fight back.
Well, in the right-wing talking heads, just today I'm listening to one of the, happened to be on the local show that I listen to, local station, and he happened to be sitting in for the local talk show host, Neil Bortz. I mean, he's just pounding that these greedy state workers do not want to pay for some of their health care. And then he said, well, I talked to a couple friends, and they're saying, I pay upwards of one half of my health care. And I'm thinking, yeah, and I'll bet you're non-union. They don't go into the issues, and just as you said, they don't go into the particulars. They certainly haven't gone into the particulars in Wisconsin. In Pennsylvania, the truth is, because of the mistakes of the legislature, because of their stupidity and their arrogance, they didn't make the payments when the economy was good. And then when the economy went bad, all of a sudden they found themselves in a deep, dark hole and couldn't get out. Now they're asking the very people who are going to be the victims to make up for their mistakes. And that story isn't getting out. That's pretty much the story all over the country.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You look at these newfound budget hawks. Now that we've got someone to go after, these new budget hawks, they've been screaming loudly, demanding cuts of pensions that go to people who have them, the public workers. And what's interesting is what's missing from this whole discussion. What's missing is any talk about Wall Street and the enormous fees that they steal from these public pension plans. Economist Dean Baker, he estimates that excessive Wall Street fees are costing public pension plans $15 billion every single year. $15 billion. How come we don't hear that in the corporate-controlled blame stream media? How come we don't hear that? Why? Because they're controlled by Wall Street. At the end of this, folks, it's always going to be, which side are you on? Are you on their side or our side? We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. A lawsuit targeting the Pentagon has some really, really interesting information in it about a retired sergeant's experience after being sexually assaulted by one of her colleagues during a deployment in Afghanistan. I'm not gonna get into her name, but what she said was really graphic and scary. And scary to me on a religious level. And this is the kind of bizarre, let me just read it. She's talking about what happened to her. She said he pulled her into his bed, he held her down, he raped her, and then he photographed the rape, this woman said. She immediately sought out assistance from the military chaplain. When this woman met with the military chaplain, he told her that it must have been God's will for her to be raped and recommended that she attend church more frequently. Think about that for a second. So when you see today the Republicans in the House cutting off funding to Planned Parenthood, and a couple of Democrats, 10 Democrats joined in it. Now, 7 Democrats flipped the other way. Good for them. But they're going to eliminate all the money going to Planned Parenthood. Again, to me, getting in between a woman and her doctor. And I see that there's a connection here. This, the connection for me is that women are second-class citizens in this country. And in religion as well. I mean, I listened to what that chaplain said. I would expect that to be something said in the Middle East. For all of the talk that, something that the Taliban would say, Jake. For all of the talk of oh, how bad they treat their women, to have something like that happen. But what I found interesting is this Jackie Spirer. She's a Democrat from California. She got up and she gave a speech, and this is what she had to say.
You know, I had really planned to speak about something else, but the gentleman from New Jersey has just put my stomach in knots. Because I'm one of those women he spoke about just now. I had a procedure at 17 weeks, pregnant with a child that had moved from the vagina into the cervix. And that procedure that you just talked about was a procedure that I endured.
So, you know, you listen to this, and really the Republicans are out there, you know, going on and on about this bill, and you know, oh, well, you know, I should have the right to question what a woman does with her body. Now, understand, this is a guy who's never going to have these problems. And I ask the question, what right does he have to question what a woman does with her body? What right does he have? And she continues with this.
I lost a baby. But for you to stand on this floor and to suggest, as you have, that somehow this is a procedure that is either welcomed or done cavalierly or done without any thought is preposterous.
And I have to agree. Especially when we're talking about this is between a woman and her doctor. But the mean out there, the right-wing mean out there, is that women do this because they want to. Oh, they're irresponsible. They go out and they go get pregnant. They don't care. It's nothing. That's the mean that they throw out there. They demean, demoralize. That's what the right does, Jake. That's their gig.
Well, I'll never understand. I said it before, but this is one, you know, on a certain level, I respect people that are pro-life. They profoundly believe that, and I understand that. What I don't understand is, why in God's name would you deprive a woman? First of all, Planned Parenthood offers pap smears, they offer education, they offer standard services for women. They offer education. Why wouldn't you want every bit of energy that's geared towards preventing pregnancies? Why wouldn't you enhance that in trying to destroy it?
Because they have no other clue. They have no other idea. They have no vision, no idea. All they understand is divisiveness, fear-mongering, and hatred. That's what they understand. And I give her credit for standing up and saying, you know, I went through this and how dare you. But she does bring it back around. And here's the rest of what she had to say, which I think is vitally important.
To think that we are here tonight debating this issue, when the American people, if they are listening, are scratching their heads and wondering, what does this have to do with me getting a job? What does this have to do with reducing the deficit? And the answer is nothing at all.
And right on. I mean, none of what the Republicans have done has done anything to create jobs or reduce the deficit. What they've done is they've caused mass pain. And I look at Wisconsin, and I'm bringing this back to Wisconsin, because what he is doing there is doing nothing to help that state. He's doing nothing to help those workers. He's doing nothing to create jobs. Now, the right would argue, oh, well, if we have a union-free state and we have a whole bunch of people working at minimum wage, that will create jobs. And I guess, will it? If you don't have any consumers with any money, are you going to create jobs? And now we're seeing that the small business owners in the state of Wisconsin are coming out and saying, hey, wait a minute, whoa, that money you want to take away from those workers? That's our money. What are you talking about? You know, I've had this conversation with small business owners when they said, oh, you know, those union workers, they make too much. They should take a pay cut. And you'd say, you know that money that you're talking about, that pay cut you want them to take? That's your money. That's money those people used to spend in this store. And you know what? That guy that I had the conversation with, his store is empty to this day. You know why? No customers. You wanna spur business? You wanna get the economy smoking again? Put money in people's pockets, workers' pockets. Put money in the working class pockets, the people who spend their income. Not the investor class, not the people who are saving for their great 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 grandchildren. Put it in the guy who works at McDonald's pockets, the girl who works as a waitress at the diner, the guy swinging a hammer, the woman driving the truck. Put the money in their pocket. That's how you create an economy. Not by going, oh, we're going to defund Planned Parenthood. Oh, we're going to go after public radio. We're going to do all this divisive stuff. They've done nothing. The Republicans have done nothing. And they're not going to do anything because they're clueless.
If I can interject here, right along the lines of what you're saying, there was a report just came out today from Wisconsin by a state agency that does studies. It's an independent state agency, much like in the federal government, that said that since this governor has taken office, they've added about $200 million to the shortfall, and much of that was largesse to corporations. Doesn't help the small businessman, doesn't help the workers. This message of tax giveaways to the corporate interests, just since he's entered office, really, I haven't heard, other than on MSNBC, I haven't heard anybody talk about it. No one.
Amazing stuff. Anyway, in the next segment, we're going to talk to a guy who, kind of becoming an internet hero, stood up to the T-Twizzlers who stuck a camera in his face, and you know what? He told the truth. He basically said what I've been saying all along is, if the Tea Party had any true ideology, if they had any true understanding of what they spew, they'd be out in the streets with the workers saying, this is an overreach of government. This is a misuse of government. This is big government run amok. You know, I could just see it now. I would agree with them. If Rand Paul stood out there and said, this is big government run amok, I'd be going, yeah, Rand, preach the good word. I'm right there with you, brother. But no, their hatred of people, their hatred of democracy outweighs their hatred of government, which is kind of weird if you think about it. Their hatred of people coming together, of association, of assembly, if you will, their hatred of that, when it's people who they don't agree with, far outweighs their disdain for big government. Because they're quite happy that Scott Walker's using the big gun, the power of big government to crush those working people. They're quite happy with that. And it's just...
Just to give you a clear indication whether if there are any questions out there in Radio Land, what his intentions are. There was an offer. There was an offer just today by one of the labor leaders that they weren't really specific. Supposedly represented about 21,000 workers. And he said publicly, I think he wanted to get an answer from the governor. He said, we will concede those concessions, but you have to leave us with the bargaining rights. And the governor said, no.
When we come back, Rick Kepler, Teamster organizer. We're back after this.
You're a proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
This is what democracy looks like.
Tens of thousands of Wisconsinites from all walks of working life continue to storm the state capitol in ever-escalating protests against a Republican effort to end collective bargaining rights for public workers. For days, they have packed the three-story Capitol building and rallied in the state capitol square, some even sleeping overnight in the Capitol Rotunda. Madison Firefighters Local 311 President Joe Conway expressed his solidarity from the state capitol steps Thursday.
When Scott Walker drew that line and tried to separate out labor from the firefighters and the police officers, we knew what we had to do. Whenever a line is drawn, we are on the side of all of labor.
Republicans in the state Senate couldn't vote to kill collective bargaining rights Thursday because Democratic senators went to Illinois, preventing a quorum required for the vote. Protesters in the rotunda cheered at the news. Mary Newton is a teacher from Janesville, Wisconsin.
I'm just so glad that the firemen came in today and supported us. I cried. I'm so glad. I emailed Tim Cullen because he led the Democrats out, and they're in Illinois right now, which is not too far away, and so they can't vote. I just can't understand why this is a budget issue. It's not a budget issue. It's about taking away our rights.
Teachers have shut down schools to protest the attack on collective bargaining rights. Wisconsin's capital continues to reverberate with the sound and fury of workers and students united. Wisconsin Democratic State Senator Chris Larson says Democrats have no intention of coming back to the Capitol until Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker listens to the people on his elimination of collective bargaining rights for public workers.
Until they're willing to listen to the 25,000 people who are here today, the tens of thousands of people that were here yesterday and the day before, you know, until that happens, I don't think we're ready to go back to the table. I mean, the Archbishop, the President of the United States, the Green Bay Packers, and 25,000 people plus are against you and want you to slow down, maybe you should slow down and not take away these people's rights.
New York City's Central Labor Council is in solidarity with Wisconsin's labor movement. The Labor Council in New York says it stands with their brothers and sisters in Wisconsin. The New York City Central Labor Council says workers everywhere will stand up together. Flight attendants on Thursday held a national day of action protesting the lack of a fair contract after 5 years of protracted negotiations at U.S. Airways. That airline just posted its second biggest profit ever, but it's pushing flight attendants for concessions. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Yeah, I love some of these videos you see on YouTube. You get these guys with their little video camera, and they think they're going to be those two twits with the camera who dressed up like a pimp and a hooker and edited the video down to get the message they want. What I love is they go out there with their camera and they're all excited. Oh, we got someone saying something. Oh boy. And they post it all over the place. And the reality is it made them look even dumber than they actually are. And this, my next guest, one of those guys who was in the video, who the right wing goes, oh, we got him. Gotcha. His name is Rick Kepler. He's a Teamster organizer. He was at the Capitol in Ohio, down in Columbus, and the T-Twizzlers brought their cameras around. Rick, thanks for taking time for me, buddy.
Hey, Rick. Nice to be on your show. Thanks, brother.
It seems like you're turning into a YouTube hero.
Hey, I just was watching those teabaggers give those teachers, the majority of people that they were teachers, and they were going around and just pissing off, making snide comments to them, you're killing us, you're stealing our tax money and all that stuff. And the teachers, of course, were doing what they instinctively want to do, try to teach them, you know, and then I just got tired of the crap that they were feeding them. So when they came and got around me and asked me a question, well,
you let them have it. And
you
for those
see
who,
it on the video.
Yep, and for those who want to see the video, you can go to RickSmithShow.com and click on Rick Kepler's name. It'll take you there. And make sure you leave a comment as well. Let the T-Twizzlers know that there was no gotcha here. There was an educational moment. And I got to tell you, Rick, I thought you were right on. For me personally, I look at this situation, and this is government overreach. This is exactly what I thought the Tea Party was supposed to be fighting against.
Yeah, that's what my whole point was, is that, wait a minute, you guys are against big government. Here it is, you know, that so-called statement. But here it is, the government, the state, taking rights away from workers. You defend the Constitution, but what the hell are you doing on the other side, you know? But that's what they are, though, Rick. You know, they're just a shill for corporate America. Their agenda is no different than Wall Street's agenda, the Chamber of Commerce agenda. It's exactly, they're a corporate-sponsored group. They're not really grassroots.
Yeah, and pretty much what we've been saying all along. You know, even some of the people who say they believe in this stuff, because it's all they hear all day long. All they hear is right wing drivel, and all they hear is Limbaugh and Hannity. They're inundated with this pro corporate message that I'm sure as an organizer you've got to run up against quite often, even in the ranks of the Teamsters. Even
it was kind of funny. I was having an organizing meeting the other night, and I was kind of laying it out because it was a public sector group that works for the Lorain County courts. And so there was about 20 people there, and they're all nervous and scared of taking this step and everything. And I was telling them about this attack on labor and the attack on labor across the country in all these states with right-to-work legislation and just this whole corporate assault on our rights right now. And this, I made the term teabagger one time during that, when I was talking to him, and about an hour and a half later in the meeting, the woman stood up and said, "I really take offense that I'm not a teabagger. I'm a Tea Party member, and I came here because I believe we need the union." And I just thought at that time, boy, are you confused, you know? But she was one of these people who just, the boss pissed her off, and she just thought, no, I'm going to this union meeting. I've had it, you know, but yet here she is, huge supporter of the Tea Party, you know.
Well, don't you think there's just this massive disconnect between reality and what they believe? Because for too long, you know, and I get this all the time in my life. You know, people, they're angry, and I, right when this whole Tea Party thing started, I was right there. I was saying, yeah, I'm ticked off. I'm angry that we're getting screwed. Our jobs are leaving the country. My 401k is a 200.5. Everything that I've been promised has been a lie. I'm ticked off. But I'm not mad at the government. I'm mad at Wall Street. I'm mad at corporate America. I'm mad at...
Yeah, that's the thing that got going for you ever since Reagan came in and said, the problem is the government. And so don't look at Wall Street, because that was what he was there for. You know, he was their little pet poodle. But so that's been the whole message all along. Oh, the government's too big. The government's taking our rights. The government, and it's, you know, it's a simple shell game. You know, look over here. Don't look at who's really ripping you off.
Look at the shiny thing.
I got to tell you, Rick, as an organizer, I cut out articles sometimes, and then because it will hit right to the heart of the matter. And CEO of Goodyear right here in Akron, I'm in Barberton, right next to Akron here in Ohio, and I had it out from the business section. This guy got up there. He was the CEO. Gibraltar was his name. And he was speaking at a roundtable with a bunch of other CEOs and Wall Street types. And he said this, and then this was the quote: "Until we drive the wages of the American worker down to those of the Mexicans, we cannot remain competitive in this global economy." That's their game plan. They don't hide it. It's not conspiratorial. That is what's going on. They do want to turn America into a third world country. And then when Warren Buffett comes along and says, "Hey, boys, there is a class war going on, and my class is winning," we got to respond to that. But sometimes, Rick, I wonder about our labor leaders. They don't even come out and talk class war stuff anymore. They just, get online, do a petition, and thank God Wisconsin is showing the way down there, brother.
Yeah, because I'm looking at this as that spark for the new progressive movement. I'm saying that this is this generation's PATCO, and I'm hoping that we respond the right way. I'm hoping that my children look back on this and say, you know, Dad did the right thing. Because we're going out to Wisconsin, going to take the show out there next week to show support and to bring the message back. But at the end of the day, it's coming back to this is our PATCO.
Well, you recall when Reagan busted the PATCO, and in case anybody doesn't remember, there was only two unions who endorsed Reagan. They all knew his history of being a union buster.
Well, the PATCO and the Teamsters.
And us, the Teamsters, right. And so, And he screwed Petco, and then he told us, oh, I'll help you with deregulation. The Carter started, actually, but then, he stuck it to us, too.
Yep.
But at the same time, we all looked back and went, Lane Kirkland and crew, why wasn't there a mass outpouring then? And we still look back and go, man, we kind of missed our moment back there. But now here's a new chance, like you're just talking about. This has got to be the time. This ain't just in Wisconsin, Ohio. This is all over the country.
Yeah.
This corporate assault on our rights, inalienable rights.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Rick Kepler, our YouTube hero. You got to see this video. Go to therickSmithShow.com and click on Rick Kepler's name. It's going to take you right to that video. Of course, leave a response for the people over at The Blaze and the other people who've put this up. Rick, in looking at this moment, I'm saying that right here, right now, this is where the fight is, because if we lose Wisconsin, Ohio is going to be next. Michigan, Indiana, Pennsylvania.
They'll fall like dominoes.
Just like dominoes. And I guess the question I've got for you, here in Pennsylvania, 51% of union members voted for Wall Street's Senator Pat Toomey. 51%. I asked some of my union friends who voted for Republicans in this last election how sorry they are now. And I look at Ohio, my home state, and say, I remember a very proud, rich union heritage. What happened in Ohio?
Same thing. Our union brothers decided that they, I hate to go this direction, but I looked at that last election as just white backlash. And a lot of people were pissed off about Obama because he didn't do enough and were thinking, and I still got concerns about what direction he's going, but I can't believe what happened, that all these states that were always blue went red, with the governors and the legislatures, and boy, now, we're feeling effects. Okay, working people, you voted for these guys for whatever reason, but I got a feeling what it is, but, and now they're going to just take it out on your hide. Well, how's it feel to have that, how's your vote do for you right now? Because
yeah.
Now they're coming after you, the patrons there, Wall Street, and they're people they throw money to, the Republicans and the Democratic Party, Rick. We've got corporatists in the Democratic Party, too. This ain't just a Republican versus Democrat.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. I'm one of the biggest critics of Bill Clinton. I think the whole NAFTA thing was what you were talking about earlier, about bringing us down to the Mexican level. In fact, if you read Thomas Friedman's book, he talks about the great leveling off, which is, going to bring the Mexicans up to $5 an hour, going to bring us down to $5 an hour. And the whole world's level.
I don't think Clinton was any friend of labor. He did a lot to harm us, and he did a lot that led to this meltdown, too, with getting rid of Glass-Steagall and all that shit. And Obama surrounded himself with a bunch of Clintonites, and so I'm looking at what he's doing, too, and it's going to be ourselves, like you said, Rick. This is our defining moment. What's labor going to do? I mean, you can cower down and adjust to this attack, or else you can fight back.
Yep, absolutely. Rick Kepler, I appreciate your time. Again, our YouTube hero, you're going to want to see this video. Go to therickSmithShow.com and click on Rick's name. It'll take you right there. Brother, I appreciate your time. Keep up the fight, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, you keep swinging too, Rick. Call me anytime, brother.
Alrighty. Beautiful. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'll be working. As long as my two hands are fit to use, I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
It's always interesting to see Congress in action, though interesting can also be appalling. For example, what a sight it was to watch the new Republican leaders as they gleefully repealed last year's law extending health care coverage to all Americans. As they voted one by one to kill it, their mantra was, no to big government health care. What you couldn't see, however, was them later slipping down the hallways of the Capitol to a little-known exclusive medical office that gives them free health care, paid for by the same big government they were just ranting about. You might think that such raw hypocrisy would cause them to feel at least a twinge of moral discomfort, but apparently they've been immunized to prevent such outbreaks of morality. a good illustration of the congressional mindset, is presently making the rounds on the Internet. Called The Haircut, it tells the story of a barber who cut the hair of a florist, but refused to take payment from the flower peddler. "I'm doing community service this week," he explained. The next morning, when the barber went to his shop, he found a thank you note and a dozen roses at his door. His next customer was a police officer needing a trim. Again, the barber declined any payment. The next morning, he found a thank you note and a dozen donuts waiting for him, a gift from the grateful cop. Then, lo and behold, a congressman came in for a haircut. When he tried to pay, the barber once more waved off the money, repeating his commitment to community service. The lawmaker was delighted by this generous gesture. And sure enough, when the barber went to his shop the next morning, he was greeted by another surprise. A dozen Congress critters lined up waiting for a free haircut. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, it's just a matter of one's moral makeup. Assuming, of course, that you have a moral makeup. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
The Blue Blood, see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to the new York Ages.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, the other night, Joe the Nerd called in, and he was talking about recall. And as we were talking, I said, I got to be honest. I'm not overly thrilled with the idea of this ping-ponging. I'm not overly thrilled with the idea of, you know, of going and having a, you know, the constant threat of recall, because I do think that, you know, that elections matter. But you look at what's going on in Wisconsin, and you've got to wonder. And you look at all of this. You've got all these people out into the streets, thousands, tens of thousands of people in Madison, Wisconsin, in opposition to Walker's plan to strip, to steal the right of people to collectively bargain, to steal wages and benefits. And there are a bunch of people who are saying, you know what, we need to recall Cheesehead. We need to recall the Cheesehead Pharaoh. Yet you got Walker who's saying, well, you know what, I'm not budging. And the reality is they can't go after Walker until at least January of next year. And, you know, looking at the rules, they say the qualified electors of the state and any county, city, village, or town of any congressional, legislative, judicial, town, sanitary, or school district, or any prosecutorial unit may petition for recall of any incumbent elected official by filing a petition with the same office or agency with whom nomination papers or declarations of the candidate for the office are filed. It goes in to also say no petition for recall of an officer may be offered for filing prior to the expiration of a one year after the commencement of office. And what they're saying is maybe they can't go after Walker, but there are eight Republicans who are possible to be recalled right now. And what they're saying is for Walker next year, they're going to need about 500,000 petition signatures to recall them. But these eight, quite possibly. And I'm curious what you think about this. What is it that, should we be pursuing this idea of recall? After all, these eight, you're only going to need about 15,000 signatures per senator to get, you know, another election. Is it worth doing? Is this something we want to go down? Is this a road we want to go down? Because remember, my great fear is this ping-ponging of politics. What we see in Latin America, what we've seen over the years in unstable countries. I'm curious. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. What do you think, Jake?
Well,
I think it is true the founding fathers deliberately made the process difficult. Now that we're talking about passing laws, does that inherently mean that they made it easy for the people who, in theory, are giving the power to these legislators? I don't know. I don't know the answer. Well, I'm asking a theoretical question. Does it follow, then, logic to mean that the founding fathers wanted the people to be able, under reasonable conditions, to recall them? I understand what you're saying. You can't, if there's a constant ping pong, you never get anything accomplished. People get frustrated. All of a sudden, you have more than just a rebellion at the ballot box. You then get into possible, as they have in other continents, you get into armed conflict. That's a good question. I think, to me, the answer is somewhere in the middle. If their offense is that egregious, I think if the constitution of that state is reasonable, I would be in favor of it. I don't know the provisions of the recall in Wisconsin. Does it just have to... What do you do? You put it on the ballot?
He has to be in for a year. Then you can file a petition for an election. You have to have 500,000 votes or 500,000 signatures on the petition to then petition the electors to have a recall vote.
And at that point, all it takes is a majority once you get the five.
That is my understanding.
I'm not so sure that's pretty easy. I'm not so sure that's a
little bit easy. 500,000 signatures is not easy. You need a lot of boots on the ground to do something like that.
What if it's one more than the majority? Is that a mandate?
Well, again, you know, it comes back down to this idea of, I go back to when they went after Nixon. The whole reason they decided not to go after Reagan is because they were afraid that this would become something that every president would then have to face. And you look, the Republicans, they wanted to get back for Nixon, so they went after Clinton. And now immediately, the left wanted to go after W. Bush, and now they want to go after Obama. I mean, it's, for me, it then becomes when something's unpopular, they go after. Now you have this as well. I worry about that. And I'm not hard on a position, but I have my concerns.
Well, I know you just articulated your feelings on it. I'm not so sure you're ever going to get away from mean-spiritedness in politics. I mean, someone once described, when I first got involved, there was a man who was in politics for a long time. He had some power. And he once described politics as the closest thing to war that you ever experience. And there's, to some degree, I know what, being around a little bit, I know what he's saying. It can be a tough, brutal game, and I'm not sure, Rick, you're ever going to get away from that nastiness of politics, especially when there's so much on the line.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. At the end of all of this, this is not just a fight in Wisconsin. It's in Ohio. It's in Indiana. It's in Michigan. It's in Minnesota. It's in Missouri. It's in New Hampshire. It's going to be right here in Pennsylvania. You look at the fact that there is, as we speak, bills out there to destroy collective bargaining. In Indiana, for instance, they have passed a bill to strip public employees of collective bargaining rights out of committee. It passed just the other day. They want to get rid of project labor agreements. They want these anti-free employee free choice act bills passed. Again, like they want to do here in Pennsylvania. The guy says, well, we want to propose a bill that mandates a secret ballot election. Mandates! Again, using the government, the weight, the power, the strength of the state government to get between workers and their employers. Think about that for a second. Where are the Tea Party people then? I remember when Americans for Prosperity came here to Harrisburg. And they brought their little voting booth with them and said, I want the right to vote. Everybody should have the right. Yet when we asked to vote, they said no. In fact, if you remember, I think you were there.
Mm-hmm.
We all asked to vote, and they said, no, you cannot vote. which is kind of interesting. But you would think, given, you know, their stated ideology, not their true heartfelt ideology, but their stated ideology, is that they don't want the government involved in that activity regardless. If you and I make an agreement, you and I should be able to make that agreement without having government interference. Same thing for between an employer and an employee. If they choose to recognize, an employer chooses to recognize that bargaining unit, why should the government get involved in it? There's peace. There's labor peace there. Now, the Employee Free Choice Act did one very, very small thing when it comes to how elections are handled. It gave the choice to the workers. That made the employers angry. They like to have the choice. In fact, the choice that they like is denying you, the worker, your rights. And that's what we've seen. Because if you look at, and I've made the statement, and I will stand by it, I think the natural rate of unionization is about 30 to 35%. I think that's natural. Like we see in the public sector, which is why all the moneyed interests, all the right-wing think tanks, all of these big corporatists, why they're gunning for the public employees right now, because that's where the members are. Because they have the ability to choose. They want to make that much harder. They want to destroy that right. And that's why we're seeing what's going on in Wisconsin. That's why you're going to see on Monday a huge rally in Ohio. Pure and simple, Jake.
I think you're right. I mean, if you look at the apex of the labor movement, I believe it happened in the late 50s, early 60s, it was right around 35%.
1965, I believe, was 35%. And then all of the attacks, big business started really, really putting the heavy foot down, using the iron fist. And it was declining. And then Reagan took office, and it was full pedal to the metal, man. Destroy workers' rights. You know, I go back and I think about my grandparents. And I think of my grandparents an awful lot. Because they lived through the time when basically unions were illegal until, and right through the big boom. When they got married and lived in their car. And my grandfather got a job working for a union coal company, made, I think he said, 17 cents an hour, shoveling coal 12, 14 hours a day. And the union stood by those workers, fought for them, raised the wages, so that my grandparents, they live in a solid middle-class neighborhood, sent their kids to a solid middle-class school, enjoyed a lot of the decent things in life. Had new cars, a retirement. My grandmother still has a retirement from the union that she worked for, a small portion of my grandfather's retirement since he passed away from the Teamsters Union. If she were just to have Social Security, she'd be starving right now. It's because she had a union that fought for them. I mean, that's the story that doesn't get told. And all we keep hearing, all I keep hearing from people is, well, you know, unions were useful once. They've outlived their usefulness. Really? They've outlived their usefulness. When workers can be fired for no reason, when wages can be slashed without discussion, when conditions can be changed, when people are getting cheated out of wages constantly, they've outlived their usefulness? Really? What's happened is we've become dumb. We've become really, really dumb. And we've allowed ourselves to be separated from our coworkers. We've allowed ourselves to be separated from our communities. Something's got to be done. And what I see happening in Wisconsin right now, what I see happening is a good thing. People are coming together. People are standing next to each other for a cause again. All across the country. New York, I believe. You got people wearing cheese hats.
Cheese heads. They actually got down Fifth Avenue, and they said, the people from MSNBC were actually taking pictures of them down there in the park.
Because the reality is today we're all cheese heads.
Absolutely. We're all Wisconsinonians. I think that's the right word.
Except for the Steelers fans who are still mourning over the Packers.
I'm trying to be serious. We're all brothers and sisters in the cause. Actually, there's a nice article that explained what happened. They had a couple hundred people, you know, supporting the cheeseheads in Wisconsin. And they went through the city and they had, you know, some guards for these companies where they stopped occasionally. And they had policemen. Some of the policemen said, hey, look, our parents are union. You know, the one policeman said to one of the demonstrators, look, my father was a teacher. So he was basically telling, we're with you. We're with you. And I think that's great to show solidarity like that. Now, the next step, if it keeps going on and on, we need to go to that state. There is where the rubber meets the road. Get people to take a week vacation like we did in other rallies. You know, take that step. The time has come. We can't be lackadaisical anymore.
Join us. Join us for the cheese siege.
Yes.
Join us.
Jeez.
We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Join us for the cheese siege. We'll be back after this.
We can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well?
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Oh, yeah. Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. D.C.'s Madame Tussauds Wax Museum has a bit of accounting problem. The museum, famous for its wax presidents, staged a promotional photo with all 44 commanders-in-chief, except there were actually only 43. See, the problem was, they didn't know that Grover Cleveland was both the 22nd and 24th president. And to get the 44, Madame Tussauds included two President Obamas. So I'm guessing they've got the election Obama and the I'm kissing the GOP hit squad Chamber of Commerce's backside Obama. Where's the election Obama? Where is he? Remember how he was effusive for praise? Just effusive with praise for unions? Remember that? Remember effusive with praise for workers' rights and the right to collective bargaining and the right to, you know, to stand up? Some are saying that he has, you know, kind of thrown his support to labor. And they're saying that this quote here, listen to this, is his, I guess, his strong statement. Here it is.
On the other hand, some of what I've heard coming out of Wisconsin, where you're just making it harder for public employees to collectively bargain generally, seems like more of an assault on unions.
And, you know, I guess that maybe that's as strong as he can get right now, that it seems like an assault on unions. No, Mr. President, it is an assault on workers and their unions. And, you know, maybe at some point he's going to have to step in. The T-Twizzlers are, you know, they're supposed to be sending in a bunch of people by bus from the, you know, the Koch brothers for a day. You know, they're going to pack them a nice picnic lunch, going to drive them in on fancy buses. And, you know, they got nothing better to do, so you might as well, like the people I met at the One Tea Party rally, the six of them who were all on unemployment, complaining about government spending, saying, smaller government, less spending. I said, I can cut spending right now. Go get a job. Cut unemployment off for you folks right there. But here's the thing, and they're going to bring in the thugs and the skull crackers, the troublemakers, and they're hoping for violence. The right is praying for violence. They're praying that they can paint the union people as thugs and teamsters with bats. You know, they want that, so that Walker can come down with the hammer and look like the law and order guy who was forced into using the National Guard. When the reality is, that's what he really wants to do. He wants to put those workers in their place. And, you know, Rupert Murdoch and Fox, they are just praying for violence. You know, you listen to this clip that was on Fox News today.
It seems like people are getting more and more aggressive, because I know we have an assembly tomorrow of supporters of Governor Walker, and I fear that there might be some conflict there. How do you sense that the crowds are getting day after day now?
You know, they're coming, so I sense that there could be some conflict. You know, he's kind of setting it up. The best part of that clip, I don't know if you heard it. Yeah, listen for the guy in the background.
It seems like people are getting more and more aggressive, because I know we have an assembly tomorrow of supporters
he's
of
screaming
Governor Walker.
Fox lies. Fox lies. yeah, they kind of do. Anyway, let's go to the phones. We got Andy on line one. How are we doing tonight, Andy?
Fine. How about yourself, Rick?
I cannot complain.
It's great what's going on in Wisconsin, huh?
I am thrilled, and we're going to be out there next week. We're going to be broadcasting from Madison, because I think this is the place where working people have to be.
That is a working people's town, too, boy. I mean, even though that's a college town, I think those people are clued right in to what's at stake.
And I think, I got to be honest, I think Walker made the cardinal sin in all of this by even uttering the use of the National Guard. That was the spark that led to all of this, I believe.
Bring it on, right?
Yep.
Bring
yep.
it on. Hey, the reason I called this, you know, one major initiative I think that we have to take in this country is the only way we're going to start getting the corporations to start thinking about the American worker and getting our jobs back here in the States instead of them being outsourced and going overseas, is we have to get representation in the corporate boardroom.
I agree, like the Germans have.
Exactly. We have to get people, working people, within those companies on the corporate boards so decisions start to be made that are going to be beneficial to the workers. In Germany, half the board is
yep.
made of workers.
Yep. Oh, but the other thing is, I'm kind of going to defend corporate America a little bit. We have given too many incentives for companies to move. We've allowed them to write off their moves. We've paid for their outsourcing. In fact, we allow the International Chamber of Commerce to grease the tubes, to set up these meetings that they have in all of these countries to be able to move jobs overseas. We've got this insane belief that there's something called free trade. I think we need politicians who are smart enough to pass laws that are going to protect American workers, and we need American consumers who are smart enough to realize that buying an American product may save someone's job, maybe their own.
Right. Well, I know there was an effort in Congress when a plant, a subsidiary or a division of a corporation is closed down here in the States and it's moved to Mexico or overseas to China or something like that, that the company would not be able to write off that as an expense.
Yeah, and the Republicans blocked it.
Right. Right. And I think that would have gone a long way to helping out.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, and this is something that doesn't get reported a lot. Most of the stuff that's traded is traded like an intercompany trade. When Whirlpool used to make washers and dryers here in the US, now they make them in China. The trade is between Whirlpool, the Whirlpool division in China, and the Whirlpool division here in the U.S. So there's no actual trade going on. They're just making the stuff that we used to buy made here. We're just buying it from people made in China.
You know, actually, you bring up Whirlpool. There happens to be a big Whirlpool plant in Slovakia and not far from where my grandparents were born. And when I go to visit there, I see that factory, and it is a sprawling complex.
Here's the thing, Andy. I'm not against Whirlpool or any of them going over there producing products for domestic consumption. Not against it at all. My problem is when you overproduce in those countries and you ship that stuff back here, and we don't see a price difference. I mean, think about Nike shoes. Not one pair of Nikes have ever been made in the U.S. Not one pair. Yet they're $70, $80, $100 a pair.
Right. Right. The citizen here in this country does not see the benefit of what you would think would be cost savings from the labor, because the prices are marked up so high, the corporations are still making tremendous profits.
Absolutely.
And, of course, that's another – unless we go back to a tariff system and back to the Hamilton plan, where if you're going to import goods, it ought to have the same price that it would cost to manufacture here with good union labor.
Yep. You know, I've always been a fan of, understand, you know, up until the Civil War, we ran our government on tariffs.
Absolutely. We didn't even have to tax people.
Nope.
Exactly. We didn't have to have an income tax.
Nope.
Because the tariffs funded the government.
You know, we said if you want access to our consumers, you want access to our markets, you got to pay for it. For me, the smart thing, and there's a whisper of a discussion going on about the VAT tax, of which I since we're not going to put tariffs up, we're not going to erect barriers, maybe the VAT tax is the way to go. Because you look at what Germany's doing, they have a VAT tax and it protects their domestic producers.
Yeah, well, my understanding of a VAT tax is you're at each stage of the manufacturing process of all the goods that are going in, you are putting a tax.
You're taxed on the value.
On it, right.
Correct. And the part of that is that when you take it into another country, you have to pay the tax on the value that was added. So it actually acts as a tariff.
Hmm. You know, that's interesting. I didn't understand that aspect of it.
That's the reason there are a lot of people, especially on the left, who are in favor of it. It acts as an artificial tariff.
Right. Well, you know, there's no question the Western Europeans, and particularly the Germans, they have an unemployment rate now that's at an 18-year low, I read the other day. You know, they got nailed pretty hard when they had to do the consolidation with Eastern Germany.
Right.
And they never – it took them a long time to recover. But right now, they're under 7%.
Well, do you know why?
Unemployment rate.
Do you know why?
Well, because they have to – when they manufacture goods, my understanding, a percentage has to come from Germany.
Correct. But the other reason is their average work week is about 33 hours right now. What they have done is the workers chose to pay into a fund like our unemployment. So instead of laying people off, they cut their hours and then they get to collect from the fund, on the hours that they've taken off. So
right.
They're getting days off. They're still getting paid for it. Everybody's working. The economy's moving along. But here in this country, we don't have the foresight, the vision, or the leadership to do something like that.
Right. There's a specific name for that program, and I forget what it is, but you're right. It's like a cookie jar that the government has. Well, they'll pay the company, in lieu of that person making money off of the particular products or goods or revenues that are coming in. The government will subsidize the company during bad times to keep the workers off the unemployment line.
You know, you look at the auto industry. You look at the auto industry. They had that, with the rubber rooms and all that, and the right just went absolutely ballistic. When the auto industry needed to lay people off, they would put them in these reserve rooms, and they would sit there and they would collect a large percentage of their paycheck. But they were a reserve workforce. They showed up. They waited to be called, or they did volunteer work. It was the company keeping people off the unemployed rolls.
Right.
And the right went ballistic. They just absolutely lost their mind. It was those greedy, evil unions who were doing it.
Because there is a huge cost as well for companies when it comes time when things get better and you got to hire those people back. A lot of times those people found other work. Now, they've gone other places. I think that's a great idea to have a reserve force, because then you're instantly ready when the demand picks up and the economy picks up to jump right into it. I mean, what could be better than that?
Yeah, you know, and the thing is especially again in a factory setting, you need to have people there. What if someone gets sick? What if someone gets hurt? What if somebody calls off? What if a whole bunch of things happen and you don't have enough people to run the line?
Right.
Then you got to shut down.
Absolutely.
But
another thing is, too, it used to be a time we had the Sherman antitrust laws.
We still do.
Big corporations.
We still have the antitrust laws. We just don't enforce them.
Right. And since the Reagan era, and I think if we broke up some of these big monopolies like the AT&Ts of the world and the Comcast and the Verizons, you'd create more jobs because you create more competition.
Oh, but Andy, we need synergy. We don't need that redundant labor. Understand, you know, the Republicans and the big business people, they don't want to hire people. They want profit, Andy. And profit, you know, you as an employee dig into the profit.
Yeah, I'm a cost center.
That's it.
Absolutely.
I appreciate the call, buddy. Thanks so much.
All right, Rick. Good luck next week.
I appreciate it. We're going to have a great time. I'm really looking forward to us getting out there, Jake. I think it's going to be a great opportunity. I think it's going to be wonderful. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make happy.
officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I got something for her. I love me some Bachman. You know, because she's crazy as a loon. I gotta be honest, when I was a dating man, crazy was one of the things that I sought. And you're gonna love this. You know, she was at a Tea Party Express forum, and she gave this big speech, and she said, and I'm gonna read it because it's pretty funny. She said, if you look through all of our history, we've been about risk takers. The people that came to the United States, other than those Native Americans who were here, all of us have the same story. And our story is, we came from someone who was a risk taker from their home country. Doesn't matter what country it is. But they took a risk, and they came here. And they knew when they came here, they weren't coming for a welfare state. They were coming here for the thrill of writing their own ticket. Who did we attract? People that wanted a better life and were willing to do what it took to get it. Yeah. The crowd went wild. I mean, you know, the T-Twizzlers just went absolutely ballistic. You know, Michelle up there on the stage. Yay! Yes! Yes! Here's the problem. She forgot to mention those people that we grabbed on the beach there in Africa, put them in chains, put them in the bottom of the boat, and shipped them over here against their will. I don't think they were interested in being here, but we needed them. I don't think, and I go back to my ancestors. I go back to the folks, you know, the especially the Irish people in my family. There are a couple from Ireland, from Belgium. They came here because they were starving. They looked around and said, there's nothing here. There's got to be somewhere better. I got two choices, stay here and die or go somewhere else and maybe not. So, I'm missing the whole risk thing, Jake. I'm just kind of missing it.
You mean that she maybe hasn't studied her history? I'm shocked. I'm shocked.
Yeah, well.
Michelle, you're disappointing me.
Did you see the big news? Guilty on all 12 counts.
Yes.
The judge up from the Lackawanna area. I'm not going to bother butchering his name. Former Judge Mark A. Civarella? That sound about right?
Yes.
Civarella. In the Kids for Cash case. Understand, these judges, they were taking some kickback money. They were getting some money back to sentence these children to jail time. And this is what happens when we have this for-profit prison system. There were six of them, the six-man, six-woman jury found the former Luzerne County Juvenile Court judge guilty as charged to a $997,600 payment he and another judge received in 2003. He could face 157 years in prison. And I look at that and I go, you know, I don't know that that's enough. Yeah, you look what this guy did to these kids. And a lot of them, and if you follow this story, a lot of these kids were first-time offenders in there for simple, you know, just kid stuff. Stuff that all of us who are of, you know, my age, your age, stuff, you know, 40s, 50s, you go back to our childhood, the nonsense that we pulled, the mischief that we got into. In this guy's courtroom would have got you thrown in jail for 6 months. Why? Because we have gone to this for-profit system. And again, you know, it's when you make what is the when you make what is that responsibility of the state private and have a profit motive, you're going to have this kind of stuff. And that's why I'm afraid. I got to be honest. I'm afraid of what's going to happen if we privatize education, if we privatize the state stores, if we privatize the turnpikes, the parking garages, all of the stuff that, that you and I, the investors of this state, put money up to build, put money up to invest in. All of this stuff will now be fire sailed off, auctioned off to the lowest bidder, I'm sure, because I don't think there are going to be many bidders over the liquor stores. That's just me. Mom and pop, they're not checking the couch cushions for change. Who's looking for it? The big retailers. That's what scares me. And you look at this, and it's another example of when you took something that was the responsibility of the state with oversight, with transparency, and you privatized it, put a profit motive to it, this is what happens. Do you think these judges at the time thought they were doing anything wrong? Probably not. They were just getting a couple of bucks for doing their job. Hey, what's wrong with that? Hey, you know, somebody's appreciating my work. And then, you know, couple more bucks come in. Hey, you know, we could use longer sentences. We got some open beds. Make those sentences just a little bit longer. Oh, what the heck? They're criminals anyway. Just like the whole three strikes and you're out nonsense. Private interests pushed for that through money at these citizen groups, just like they're doing with the vouchers. All of these so-called grassroots citizens groups. Where are they getting all this money? They're getting it from private education. They're getting it from the privateers, the profiteers. That's where they're getting it. And we see it, Jake.
Well, what bothers me about this case of official repression, which is one of the worst I've ever seen. I mean, if these guys spend the rest of their lives in jail, I say, you know, they deserve every day in court. My question is, where were the safeguards in the system? Where were those who were there to protect the rights of the accused? Where were the public defenders? Where were the other lawyers? No one didn't set off alarm bells. No one thought this was unusual. No one thought he was overstepping his... This went on for years.
Yep.
That's what's alarming. And I understand up in that county, they have a history of corruption, but you know what? If there's one place where the public assumes there's not corruption, it's in the bench. Yep. And as we have seen here, in stark terms, that's not even true.
He was found one guilty of racketeering, 4 counts of mail fraud, 3 counts of conspiracy, 4 counts of filing false tax returns. He wasn't even reporting the money he was getting. His co-judge, the other guy, the co-conspirator, Michael Conahan, he pled guilty. He's going to face up to 20 years in jail. So good for them. I'm sure they'll be very popular.
I'm sure they will once they find out they're judges, but I'm sure they'll be segregated from the population.
And you know, you talk about judges, and you look at this idea that somehow these judges, they like on the Supreme Court, they have immunity to any judicial ethics laws. And you look at people like Scalia and Thomas and Alito, who are spending a lot of time raising money for conservative causes. I don't know that I'm comfortable with that. And Chris Murphy, representative from Connecticut, he's proposing that, you know what, we take that immunity away. He said after learning about the outrageous actions of Thomas and Scalia, he's working on legislation to end that conflict of interest in the Supreme Court. In the midst of Citizens United case, Thomas and Scalia were hosted by the infamous Koch brothers, who funded many of the attack ads this fall. Taking them on lavish retreats and paying them big money to speak. Is that what we want? Do we want our judges doing this? Murphy's bill will apply the Judicial Conference Code of Conduct to all federal judges and to the Supreme Court. And it'll require justices to simply publicly disclose their reasoning behind. I think it's a good thing. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with Paul Secunda, associate professor at Marquette University. Back after this.
Proud
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Tens of thousands of Wisconsinites from all walks of working life continue to storm the state capitol in ever-escalating protests against a Republican effort to end collective bargaining rights for public workers. For days, they have packed the three-story Capitol building and rallied in the state capitol square, some even sleeping overnight in the Capitol Rotunda. Madison Firefighters Local 311 President Joe Conway expressed his solidarity from the state capitol steps Thursday.
When Scott Walker drew that line and tried to separate out labor from the firefighters and the police officers, we knew what we had to do. Whenever a line is drawn, we are on the side of all of labor.
Republicans in the state Senate couldn't vote to kill collective bargaining rights Thursday because Democratic senators went to Illinois, preventing a quorum required for the vote. Protesters in the rotunda cheered at the news. Mary Newton is a teacher from Janesville, Wisconsin.
I'm just so glad that the firemen came in today and supported us. I cried. I'm so glad. I emailed Tim Cullen because he led the Democrats out, and they're in Illinois right now, which is not too far away, and so they can't vote. I just can't understand why this is a budget issue. It's not a budget issue. It's about taking away our rights.
Teachers have shut down schools to protest the attack on collective bargaining rights. Wisconsin's capital continues to reverberate with the sound and fury of workers and students united. Wisconsin Democratic State Senator Chris Larson says Democrats have no intention of coming back to the Capitol until Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker listens to the people on his elimination of collective bargaining rights for public workers.
Until they're willing to listen to the 25,000 people who are here today, the tens of thousands of people that were here yesterday and the day before, you know, until that happens, I don't think we're ready to go back to the table. When the Archbishop, the President of the United States, the Green Bay Packers, and 25,000 people plus are against you and want you to slow down, maybe you should slow down and not take away these people's rights.
New York City's Central Labor Council is in solidarity with Wisconsin's labor movement. The Labor Council in New York says it stands with their brothers and sisters in Wisconsin. The New York City Central Labor Council says workers everywhere will stand up together. Flight attendants on Thursday held a National Day of Action protesting the lack of a fair contract after 5 years of protracted negotiations at U.S. Airways. That airline just posted its second biggest profit ever, but it's pushing flight attendants for concessions. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left, reaching out of poverty. Father's son left to carry on through dinner, had his vein.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, you can download our podcast right there. Or you can watch the video stream as we put up every evening. You know, you look what's going on in Wisconsin and Ohio, I guess, tomorrow. Another big day in Ohio as people are going to be gathering in the Capitol. We are heading to Madison, Wisconsin next week to do our program from there. Hope you'll join us each night. But, you know, I'm thrilled, I'm excited, but I'm a little bit inside of me worries. The right is now pushing this mean that, well, you know, it's been peaceful so far. But that's why I've asked Paul Secunda, he's an associate professor at Marquette University, to come talk to us about what's going on in the down on the ground in Madison. Professor, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rick, for having me.
You know, you've been down to the area there.
Yeah.
What's the sentiment you're getting? The reports from the students down there.
The students and the rest of the organizers are extremely hopeful, and they're also very passionate about their belief that there is an injustice being done against public sector workers, and they're they're going to persist and stay until they can get the governor to change his mind.
I hope that's the case. But, you know, I was watching Fox News today, and it seemed the guy who was doing the interview from the site, it was almost like he was hoping for something, you know, some conflict. And I got to be honest, I think Fox and I think the right and the people who want to take rights away from workers, they're praying for some kind of violence so that they can use the National Guard to crush this.
Yeah, and that would be really unfortunate. I was looking up the history here of the National Guard being used against workers in Wisconsin, and the last time the National Guard was called in by the state of Wisconsin was in 1886, when they killed about 7 workers who were trying to argue that they should only have to work 8 hours a day. So this is really setting us back to kind of 19th century industrial revolution type approaches. It's really shocking.
You know, when you bring up something like that, what pops into my mind is the right wing meme that I hear all the time, that unions have outlived their usefulness. I hear this all the time. Well, those battles were fought in the past, and we've won those, and we're moving on. We're a much better, more enlightened society. But I would argue, without collective bargaining, without people coming together, those days could come back right away.
Yeah, and we've heard from the horse's mouth, so to speak. One of the most anti-union state senators in Wisconsin, Grotham, said very proudly and very explicitly he would just be happy if all unions would just go away. And I've seen similar sentiment on other both mainstream and right-wing sites. So yeah, I agree with you absolutely, Rick. This is a situation where we have to be proud and diligent about supporting the public sector workers in Wisconsin and let them know we're 100% behind them and that they are on the right side of history and they are fighting a just battle.
Yeah, and like I said, we're going out there to help bring attention to it, because I got to be honest, the mainstream corporate-controlled media hasn't focused on it here lately a little bit more, but the first several days, nothing.
And even when they have focused on it, and this includes MSNBC, which is usually an ally, they've really not understood properly what the dispute is about. They keep saying it's about pension cuts and wage cuts. It's not about pension cuts or wage cuts.
Nope.
It's about the right to collectively bargain, which is internationally recognized as a human right that civilized societies recognize. It's really, Rick, not rocket science.
Not at all. And I got into an argument yesterday for a couple of minutes with someone about the right of association.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this is to me, it's a constitutional thing. I have the mm-hmm. right to assemble. I have
right.
And a lot of times, and this is where the hair splitting begins, mm-hmm. Is the right of assembly the right of association? I say yes. But to me, it's almost constitutional to me, plain and simple.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's certainly a right to association that has been recognized by the Supreme Court to organize and join a trade union. On the question of whether or not there's a constitutional right to collectively bargain, I think the question's a little closer, but there are some theories out there. For instance, I don't know if you remember, Rick, you and your readers, about the Boy Scouts case about a decade ago where they excluded a gay assistant scoutmaster because it was against the Boy Scout morals. Well, that same type of logic, this idea of an expressive association, an association that has ideas that it wants to advocate, can not only be used by conservative groups, but of course can be used for more progressive groups. And so unions have been recognized as expressive associations, and I think there's a good argument that the First Amendment protects a union's ability to have a say, to express itself in the workplace through collective bargaining.
Let me ask you this. You know, the Republicans in the House voted yesterday to take all funding away from the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board. Of course, it was shot down.
Right.
But what would happen, do you think, from a legal perspective, if the NLRB went away? I mean, if they had no money, they can't exist. There was talk that they want to defund them to the point where they can only work 9 months a year and 3 months they're off. Your thought?
Yeah, my thought is that the NLRB is statutorily required to exist under the National Labor Relations Act, and to the extent that the appropriations process to basically for all practical purposes take it out of existence, I think there would be a very strong challenge to that action. Luckily, 60 Republicans joined every single Democrat to defeat that amendment, and the NLRB is going to continue to work to secure rights that are enshrined in the National Labor Relations Act.
I got to be honest with you. There's part of me that looks at the board and feels that it was put into place to quell strikes, to quell uprisings like we're seeing in Madison right now by having this this mechanism to solve labor management relation problems without people taking to the streets, without employers having the National Guard come in. It was this way of doing things without having the blood in the streets.
Correct, and that's still the case in the private sector. We still have the National Labor Relations Board and the National Labor Relations Act to kind of channel this industrial combat into more peaceful processes. The problem, of course, with Governor Walker's proposal is by taking away essentially all collective bargaining rights from almost all public sector employees in Wisconsin, you're taking away that ability to transmute this conflict into a more peaceful process. And so what you're seeing is the outrage from the 30,000 and more protesters over the last 4 or 5 days in Madison.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Paul Secunda, associate professor at Marquette University. He's been on the ground in Madison, Wisconsin, as the protests have been going on. You know, I look at Walker. I look at people like Kasich, governor of Ohio. I look at our guy here, Tom Corbett. They all have this idea that they want to run government like a business. And I look at what's going on in Wisconsin and in Ohio and in a lot of other states. They want to run the government like a business. And what business has been doing for the last 30 years is the exact kind of stuff we're seeing, denying workers their rights.
Agreed. I mean, we have a situation where a lot of the people supporting Governor Walker and these other governors in other states are using an economic analysis to suggest that this is a matter of running a tight budget, and the only way we can write a tight budget is by taking the unions out of the equation. But, of course, you can't quantify things like liberty and justice and fairness. These are things that have to be fought for and what unions have been fighting for over 100 years in this country. And I think the more we argue in their language, in quantities and economics, the more we do a disservice to these rights that are unquantifiable.
So if you were the Frank Luntz of the left, let's say, what language would you be using? Because the right does a masterful job in framing issues in very simplistic terms, in two or three word thoughts. Where would you go?
I would say American workers have the right to fairness in their workplaces. This is an accepted international right and civilized society, and these rights have led to great developments such as the weekend, the 8-hour working day, and benefits such as health insurance and pension.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Paul. That would have to be really small font to fit on a bumper sticker.
Well, maybe I would just say something to the effect of civilized societies respect workers' rights to treatment in the workplace.
Again, still small font. You're not going to read that at the light. It's just not going to happen.
No, you know what? It's hard because I think when you try to truncate the message, you kind of mislead. And, of course, the progressives don't need to mislead here because we're fighting for the good fight, you know, trying to ensure these things in the workplace. It's the Republicans and the conservatives who are misleading and trying to use catchphrases to kind of encompass what's going on, and those catchphrases are just not accurate.
Let me give you the last bit of questioning I've got.
Sure.
There's been talk of a recall.
Yeah.
They're saying that they can recall 8 of the senators right now, and in a year they can go after the governor. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, that's accurate, but you have to understand this cuts both ways. So just as there are now fledgling movements on Facebook and on Twitter to recall some of the 8 state Republican senators, and then, as you point out, after a year, Governor Walker, there are also vulnerable Democrats who are subject to recall. And I have now seen an article in the Capital Times, which is the paper in Madison, suggesting that Tea Party activists are starting to target Democrats. So it's something that could work if we organize and if we try to take out these union-busting Republicans, but we have to be careful to protect our own at the same time.
Let me ask you, you know, the sentiment of, you know, we're not in Wisconsin yet, but what sense do you get of the greater number of people? Are they in favor with the folks who are out in Madison, or is there some apathy? I would think there's probably a bit of all of it.
I would have to tell you that just being in Madison yesterday and then being in Milwaukee most of today, that's all people are talking about. So I don't think there's a lot of apathy. I think people have very strongly held views. Everything from we need our unions, we need collective bargaining rights, to right-wingers who are saying things like teacher unions, stymie reform, exploit children, protect incompetence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And people are trying to convince that middle group of their side. So people are, I think, tilting towards the unions right now, but the fight is certainly not over, and persistence is necessary.
Now, I got to tell you, this is an excellent educational opportunity for labor to get out their message and for once be the one to tell their own story.
Agreed.
Paul Secunda, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much, Associate Professor at Marquette University. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
It's always interesting to see Congress in action, though interesting can also be appalling. For example, what a sight it was to watch the new Republican leaders as they gleefully repealed last year's law extending health care coverage to all Americans. As they voted one by one to kill it, their mantra was, no to big government health care. What you couldn't see, however, was them later slipping down the hallways of the Capitol to a little-known exclusive medical office that gives them free health care, paid for by the same big government they were just ranting about. You might think that such raw hypocrisy would cause them to feel at least a twinge of moral discomfort, but apparently they've been immunized to prevent such outbreaks of morality. A good illustration of the congressional mindset is presently making the rounds on the Internet. Called The Haircut, it tells the story of a barber who cut the hair of a florist, but refused to take payment from the flower peddler. "I'm doing community service this week," he explained. The next morning, when the barber went to his shop, he found a thank you note and a dozen roses at his door. His next customer was a police officer needing a trim. Again, the barber declined any payment. The next morning, he found a thank you note and a dozen donuts waiting for him, a gift from the grateful cop. Then, lo and behold, a congressman came in for a haircut. When he tried to pay, the barber once more waved off the money, repeating his commitment to community service. The lawmaker was delighted by this generous gesture. And sure enough, when the barber went to his shop the next morning, he was greeted by another surprise. A dozen Congress critters lined up waiting for a free haircut. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, it's just a matter of one's moral makeup. Assuming, of course, that you have a moral makeup.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, as we move forward here in the state, that's what we're going to be seeing. We're going to be seeing tons of auctions, fire sales, and you and I, the taxpayer, we're the ones going to get the short end of the stick. Amazing stuff. On the 23rd of this next week, they're going to have a rally in Harrisburg to say, hey, you know, we support those workers in Wisconsin. On Wednesday, the 23rd, they're going to be in Harrisburg to say, you know what, 1 o'clock at the State Capitol Rotunda. We support them from 12 to 1. They're going to be there. AFSCME District Council 89 is part of that. And look, this should be happening all across the country. Every day there should be people lining up at their Capitol saying, we support these people. Should be in town square saying, we support these people. Every day at lunch. Should be out in the streets. I don't care where you live. You should be out in the streets, and people should see you. Because I think this is an opportunity. This is an excellent opportunity for education. Because the right keeps pushing this meme out there. Well, you know, unions were okay once. They were useful at one time. You know, when they had children working in coal mines. Except we don't need them anymore. Because there are no more children there. But then you see a Republican in Missouri go, you know what? We should do away with all child labor laws. In fact, we should allow kids under 16 years old to work in hotels. As long as the hotel gives them a room. We should, you know, take away all the restrictions. They shouldn't have to keep any hour requirements. We shouldn't know where they work. No work permits, nothing. Wherever they want to work. And however they can be exploited. That's what the Republicans want. And you tell me that unions aren't necessary today. Really? You know, you got to wonder, man. You got to wonder what people are smoking. Just amazing. Anyway, Reuters reported yesterday that Iraq's capital wants the United States to apologize and pay $1 billion for damage done to the city, not by bombs, but by the blasts. The blast walls and the Humvees since the U.S. invaded Iraq and toppled Hussein. The city government issued its demand in a statement on Wednesday that said Baghdad's infrastructure and aesthetics have been seriously damaged by the American military. The statement said, quote, the U.S. forces changed this beautiful city to a camp in an ugly and destructive way, which reflects deliberate ignorance and carelessness about the simplest forms of public taste, due to the huge damage leading to a loss the Baghdad municipality cannot afford, we demand the American side apologize to Baghdad's people and pay back these expenses. You know, here's the thing. For years, we were dropping bombs over there, blowing stuff up. What did you think they were going to do? All that money that they were supposed to have, they didn't. And now we're starting to hear some really bizarre stuff. In fact, the Bush administration's main, their main man, the main guy, the guy with the information, the insider, his name's Rafid Ahmad Alwan Al-Jab, whatever. They just called him Curveball. Now I know why. Curveball said, I and my sons are proud of the fact that they lied. They fabricated something to topple the regime, and we're proud of that. We were the reason to give Iraq the margin of democracy. So they lied, and we knew he lied. And they, you know, right at the beginning, Jake, we knew he lied. And and if I'm, there's one guy, right, and I've been saying this all since the beginning. There's one guy who I blame the most. And that's Colin Powell. Because it was Colin Powell's credibility. It was his stature. It was his name that really the world took and allowed us some leeway on. When he went to the UN, and he had those cartoons. Do you remember that? He had those cartoon pictures of the hand-drawn mobile chemical labs. And he's going, yeah, these cartoons. Remember these cartoons? These are where the chemical weapons are. They're driving around on trucks. Look just like these illustrations that we're holding up in front of you. It was his word. It was his name that was soiled. He's the guy who got the shaft in this. And I blame him. He should have stood up. But now his mouthpiece, or this retired Army Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who has been out there pretty much from the beginning saying, you know what, saying all the things I'm sure Powell would want to say, but can't. So Powell's out there saying, you know, or I mean, Wilkerson's out there saying, you know, yeah, I believe that they flat out lied. What else can we believe? So a lie got us into this, and we know it, and we're not willing to do anything. So Powell's saying we need answers. We need to have investigations, and I agree. I think somebody, Jake, has got to look into this. Somebody has got to investigate this because we have lost too many people. We have lost too much money. We have lost too much credibility. We have lost too much.
There's too much evidence that points to the fact that they did exactly what I claim and a lot of Americans claim they did. They predisposed that they wanted to go into Iraq prior to 9/11. Once 9/11 was here, they jumped on board. There's too many of the administration people that did things that point to a real snow job in the American people. I mean, there's some of them who now they're going back and they're discovering statements where they said, well, you know, we knew that he didn't have weapons of mass destruction, in, i.e. nuclear weapons, but he wanted to. Now, how can we go to war on the supposition, one, that they want to have nuclear weapons, and two, that they would use them against us? Unbelievable.
Absolutely unbelievable.
I mean, not to mention the fact that three or four of them, including Wolfowitz, including Cheney, including, Condoleezza Rice, forgot her name. They all made speeches going back into the late 1999-1998 era, extolling the virtues of invading Iraq. They, without question, got us into that war on false issues they had predetermined and they hid behind 9/11. And the conservatives are very good at that.
Well, I think Cindy Sheehan had the best quote, and you know, here it is, pretty simple.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalist and longtime Bush family friend Mickey Herskowitz, then Governor George Bush stated, "One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander in chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I have that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote.
And what did he do? He did exactly that. Followed the exact statement down to the bottom line. Let's go to the phones. Got Helen on line one. How are we doing tonight, Helen?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I was watching the fact that they're having the budget fight for the continuing resolution, and they were talking about, you know, the first military wife that goes on TV and says, "We didn't get our check, I can't pay the rent, I can't feed my kids." The Democrats have got to remember to play that up. But they're, you know, they figure by the 4th of March, the money will run out if they don't get this continuing resolution. That'll be the day after the Social Security checks are delivered. That gives them one more month. And, you know, so many of these teabaggers are on Social Security. And I think maybe we should let it happen.
Do you think the Republicans are dumb enough to do it?
I don't think they are, but I hope that it gets close and it scares the heck out of some of those stupid people. I myself am on Social Security, but I have a fallback position, fortunately, so I won't starve. But there are some people that are Social Security check to Social Security check. They have very little pension to cover them.
Yeah, you know, there's. I'm not sure. I'm kind of in the middle because I think the Republicans are setting it up so that they can blame the Democrats. In fact, yesterday we played this clip of John Boehner. Here he is.
Well, Republicans want a government shutdown.
The only people cheering for government shutdown around here are Democrats, led by Harry Reid and Chuck Schumer. There's been no talk about shutting the government down on our side.
No, not on our side at all. In fact,
well, he doesn't have to talk about it, but we have to keep saying that they're doing it by their actions. We have to let them, let people know. I mean, they keep saying, and another thing, they keep saying that we've got to cut all this entitlement, and by that they mean the welfare,
you.
Food stamps and stuff like that.
And you. Cut that Social Security. That'll save it.
Well,
get those old people back to work.
Yes. Well, I ran into another thing that I was reading. 2008, a young woman wrote a book called Stolen Innocence. She was the young woman who came out about that polygamous sect. She was one of the main testifiers there. Turns out that these guys with 3, 4, 5 wives, their wives, and she says, most of them go and give false names, false information, and get food stamps and welfare. They don't have big gardens. They're living off of the taxpayer. And that's Orrin Hatch and all across Arizona and all through that Midwestern section there. There are thousands and thousands of these families, and they keep pointing their fingers at our minorities, and it turns out there's more of them on welfare than there is any of our minorities here in the East.
Yeah, and none of the big welfare queens, the really big ones, the ones that live on Wall Street.
Yes, yes. Well, they do, too, live on Wall Street because their husbands run these businesses. One of them, owned by Jeffs, I guess that's the name, was providing valves and rings to a company called Thycol. If you remember, they're the people that had the problem with a rocket that blew up.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's – somebody said to me when I told them this, but those are the people that always are against my people having welfare, and she's a black lady. So, you know, we've got to get this out there.
Yep. I'm right there with you, Helen.
Yeah.
And you just did. Thank you so much.
Sure. Bye.
And she's right. I mean, spot on. Again, but, you know, you got Boehner saying, well, we're not talking about, no Republicans ever said that. Well, except Representative Walsh.
We will do what we have to do to shut down the government if we have to choke Obamacare if we have to.
Choke Obamacare. We're going to take a quick break, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Your proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Wall Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program here, you can check it out. Download the podcast or watch the video that we've got there for you. Question is, how do you fix the economy? How do we fix our budget problems? You know, in Wisconsin, they're talking about it's like $130 million that they're complaining they have this big shortfall. Yet they gave like $110 million of it away in tax handouts. So the other 20-some million dollars, a lot of money, but not worth throwing away the fabric of this country. Not worth stealing people's rights in broad daylight. And you look at what he did in Wisconsin, what Kasich did in Ohio, saying, you know what, we don't need those jobs. We don't need the tens of thousands of jobs that would have come along with that rail project. Wouldn't need that. Look down in Florida, Governor Rick Scott, he rejected the high-speed rail funding, saying, well, we don't want that. $2.5 billion almost in funding to build a high-speed rail. Turned it down. Now what you've got is you've got the two senators from Florida, the Republican Micah and the Democrat, sort of Democrat, Nelson, saying we need to figure out how to get this money and to get these jobs into our state. And they're working to try and figure out how to create some kind of an authority within the cities so that the money could come into the cities and the cities would take care of it. Kind of a backdoor deal if you think about it.
Not kind of.
kind of going around to the back door and usurping the Republican governor's power, don't you think?
Well, did you notice that these Republican governors, when they get in office and they know that they have control, they have their allies in control of the legislatures, they do some bad things right away with the idea, I'm sure, with the intent that, well, you know, I mean, they're 4 years. And unfortunately, they're right when they calculate that sometimes the voters' memory are not that long.
Sad, sad stuff. Dow Jones Wire writes, an attempt by conservative Republicans to extract even more cuts from the federal budget was beat back by the House today as debate on a bill to fund the federal government continues. Fiscal conservatives were seeking to cut discretionary spending across the government by a further 5.5%. That would have resulted in further cuts of $22 billion more. The amendment introduced by Marsha Blackburn, Republican from Tennessee, would have exempted military spending and would have cut Congress's own budget by 11%. When the leadership initially introduced the budgetary legislation 2 weeks ago, it included about $35 billion in spending cuts from the current level. But, you know, after a revolt within the Twizzler party there, largely led by freshman lawmakers, another $26 billion were cut, jacked it up to $61 billion for the rest of this year, which ends September 30th. Now, what they're saying is, you know, this amendment that they've put forward shot down, 281 to 147. A bunch of Republicans jumped over. But here's the thing. How do we fix our budget? You know, how do we close the gap? How do we find the money? Personally, I'm one of these guys, Jake, that, you know, if I've got bills, I've got to go out and find another job. I got to work a couple extra hours. I got to bring some more revenue into the house. Because there are certain things that you cannot cut. There's a certain point of your budget, and you know, like running your household, like any person knows, there are certain things that cannot possibly be cut. You got to pay your light bill. You got to pay your mortgage. You got to pay the water and sewer and trash. You got to pay all those bills. You got to put food on the table for your kids. They're going to need school clothes. They're going to need a bunch of stuff. You got to have it. If you're not making enough money, you got to go out and find another job to raise a bit more money. Our problem, I believe, is both the revenue side and the spending side. We're not hearing anybody talking about raising revenue. The president said, oh, well, we'll let the Bush tax cuts expire in another year and a half. I'm talking about right now. We need cash now. Like the guy, like J.G. Wentworth on TV, you know, the guy who rips you off for your annuities. Cash now. That's what we need. I wonder if he's trademarked that. Hope we don't get sued. But here's how we do it, I think. There is an awful lot of money that goes into the millet's budget. An awful lot. And there's an opportunity there. You know, look, I understand. I'm the first one to say that, you know, cutting military budgets means cutting jobs. All of these weapons that we produce, it's one of the last industries we have that manufactures in this country, that actually manufactures stuff. I say we could use that money better. So not necessarily laying those people off, but changing how we use them. To me, using that money in a more efficient manner. Oh, I don't know, maybe for a rail system.
Absolutely. And then when you factor in, just like Senator Boner did, or Congressman Boner just tried to do, he tried to create jobs. He tried to get a bill passed for a second engine on that new jet fighter, which the military says we don't want. In other words, it's the opinion of the professionals that it's unnecessary. That happens a lot. That's one of the big reasons. You have cost overruns in defense budgets because people in Congress are looking to maximize the jobs many times over and above what the military said they wanted. That's part of it. And if we have a choice of spending billions and billions of dollars on a fighter we don't need and taking care of the basic services that many millions of Americans rely on, I personally, and I think most Americans would agree with it, we take care of our people first.
I'm right there with you. The other thing we can do that I think, we need to start eliminating some of the big subsidies that go to big corporations, like big agribusiness. Do you know that we paid out $250 billion in subsidies between 95 and 2009? $250 billion. And the reality is just about 10% of that. It went, 3/4 of that went to about 10% of the big farms. So you've got, a small number of these big agribusinesses, a very small number of these really big farms who are sucking up 3/4 of this money. What we need is a different approach to that. And we've all seen the stories of, you know, people who get these farm subsidies who aren't even farmers. They just have houses on big plots of land. You got these people who buy these big farms. They're not farmers. They just want a bunch of land. They got the money. And we're paying them. We need to stop that. We need to do away with that. And to be honest, you know, in our trade agreements, you know, some of the reason our trade agreements are so bad for working people and for manufacturing is that we have to concede some of that stuff to make up for agribusiness. Because understand, when another country opens up their borders to us, agribusiness goes after them, destroys them. Look at Mexico. Mexico is a perfect example.
Monsanto.
All of them. We need to get rid of a lot of the wasteful tax expenditures. We need to close a bunch of loopholes. A bunch of them. And we need to absolutely, positively, without question, we need a transfer tax on Wall Street. We absolutely need a transaction tax.
Well, here's another thing. Governor of Florida, Governor of Ohio, Governor of Wisconsin, all just canceled big projects, which would have done what?
Put people to work,
which means what? They earn wages. Oh, yeah. They happen to pay taxes back into the state government. Has that escaped these people?
Yes. The other big thing that has to happen, and again, it goes back to the Bush years with that Medicare Part D, we need to allow Medicare to negotiate for lower drug prices. We absolutely have to figure out a way to get, like everybody else in the world, like the free market people love to talk about, competition, you know, allowing the consumer to choose. We haven't done that. And we need to talk about some of the third rails of politics. We need to talk about the military, and we need to talk about Social Security. We absolutely need to tackle the problem with Social Security. And there is a massive problem, in my opinion, with Social Security. And it's not what the T-Twizzlers are going to tell you. So T-Nuts, don't get all excited. We're not cutting Granny's benefits. We're not kicking her to the curb. She's not going to have to eat cat food. The problem I see is how we fund it. How we fund it. Right now, you're looking at, what, 12.5%? Now that Obama took 2% away, you're looking at 10.5% of your wages going to Social Security up to $106,000. How many people make over $106,000? How many? If you do, please call in. I'd love to talk to you. Most of us don't. So we pay Social Security tax on every single penny we earn. My problem is everybody up above $106,000, they walk away scot-free. Personally, I say you drop the rate down to about 4 or 5% and you tax every penny of income. And you change capital gains to be income. So every bit of revenue that comes into your household, we tax you 2, 3, 4, 5% on. 5% absolute maximum. You want to talk about a stimulus? That, my friends, is a stimulus. And we solve our problems.
Instant from the first check.
That's it.
And you know the average person, with a family especially, it's one of those things that they will spend. It's not like, oh, boy, I got an extra $30 in my check. I'm going to put that. No, they're going to spend that on basics of life. The fundamentals, the food, the clothing, the house, the extra car. In other words, it's going to be an economic stimulus. You are right on that.
And nobody, there is nobody talking about this. If you think this is the simplest solution in the world, you make everything taxable, every bit of income, interest on your bank, all of that. 3-4%. That's it. And I don't think Warren Buffett would miss it. I think he's going to get a little extra cheese on his hamburger. I think he's okay. I don't think he's going to have to eat generic macaroni and cheese. I think he's going to be okay.
Well, it's like I heard an analyst, and I think the analysts themselves were pretty wealthy. He said, look, he said in the past, we've had a fair tax structure. And this idea that somehow if we tax the rich a little bit more, that somehow that's going to stop them from buying things and it's going to hurt the economy is sheer nonsense. It's just sheer nonsense.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. Again, we're heading to Madison, Wisconsin next week. We hope you'll tune in and join us. We're back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
For many, the 8-hour day is the standard, but it wasn't always this way. The original American workday was from sunup to sundown, following the demands of an agricultural workday. Over time, the nation became more industrialized and workers moved from individually owned, self-sufficient farms to factories, taking workers from their homes and families. Factory owners demanded the agricultural sunup to sundown workday, forcing workers to toil long hours in grueling conditions. Workers began to collectively organize in pursuit of more time for family, education, and recreation. The cry of 8 hours. 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will grew louder. For a century, the 8-hour day was viewed as the holy grail of the labor movement, and for this hallowed vision, workers sacrificed, often with their blood and their lives. The first strike for shorter hours occurred in May of 1791 in the city of Philadelphia, where carpenters protested a day's wages, paying the same in January as was paid for a longer day in July. Chicago in 1886 was home to one of the largest showings of solidarity. Some 80,000 workers turned out to support the 8-hour cause. It was in Chicago's Haymarket Square that a terror bomb and the blazing guns of company-paid police cost policemen and numerous workers their lives and their blood. As a result of the Haymarket tragedy, 8 innocent men were tried and convicted for a crime they did not commit. 4 of the men were hung. The Haymarket Square tragedy was but one of many battles in which working men, women, and children shed blood, tears, and flesh in the pursuit of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Modernizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Again, next week we are going to be in Madison, Wisconsin, for the rally. We're going to be there as long as we need to be. We're hoping to. You know, right now, we're looking at Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday doing the program from there. So we would like your participation, some input. If you're in the area, we'd love to see you. I think it's going to be an amazing. An amazing opportunity to get out and talk to people, to really get on the ground and see what this is all about. And maybe we run into some T-Twizzlers. Maybe we have those discussions. And maybe like Rick Kepler, we become YouTube heroes like he is. I gotta be honest. And again, you'll want to go to the ricksmithshow.com and click on Rick Kepler's name and watch the YouTube video that the T-Twizzlers did. Again, thinking we got him. Oh boy. We showed him being a union thug. Oh, when all it did was show how ignorant the guy with the camera was. But again, no accounting for sense. Amazing. But again, anyway, we're looking forward to it. I'm excited as all can be. I think this is going to be a good time. I think this is history in the making. When was the last time you saw 30,000 people in a state capitol? Especially over a labor issue. I really do believe this could be, Jake, the beginning of a rebirth of people waking up and going, you know what? If, going back to what my grandfather always said, if a rich guy is going to spend a buck, to deny you of something or to convince you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. And I think people are going, hey, what's this? Because I honestly believe most people have no idea what collective bargaining is and had no idea what it is until now. This could put that in their vernacular where they go, hey, what is this thing, collective bargaining? What is this thing that I've never heard of before? Do I need it? Maybe I do. If they're taking it away, maybe somebody needs.
Well, the governor's saying, there's accusations that we're going to take away their bargaining rights, but they're going to have bargaining rights. Let me take 30 seconds and tell our listeners exactly what this legislation would do. First of all, their health care costs are going to go up considerably. Also would require collective bargaining units to conduct annual votes to maintain certification on a yearly basis. Which is a costly procedure and eliminates the rights of unions to have dues deducted from worker paychecks. This man is doing everything he can to weaken and destroy. Those kind of things dramatically would take away the effectiveness of a union, and you'd pretty much have a shell of a union left. So don't be persuaded by his false arguments.
And here
he is going after unions.
And here on the 23rd, here in Harrisburg, from noon to 1, next Wednesday, they're going to have a rally here in Harrisburg, to kind of show Governor Corporate that, the workers here are in solidarity with those folks. If the corporate guys, if Governor Corbett is thinking about, maybe I can get away with this in Pennsylvania. This needs to be one of those early statements where we go, don't even think about it. Also on Tuesday is Wear Red Day, so everybody, please break out your red T-shirts, your red handkerchiefs, a red hat. Originally I thought red underwear, but if you're willing to show them, probably not such a great idea.
Yeah, I think the three of us, I think we better abstain from that.
Oh, I never thought about men wearing red underwear.
Well, of course. You thought it would just be the women.
Well, yeah, that's all I'd want to see.
Well, you didn't, you weren't so
sick. Well, at the end of it, whatever floats. There you go. But we're red on Tuesday. On Wednesday, noon to 1 o'clock here at the Capitol in Harrisburg. Get out and show your support. If you can't be in Madison, be here in Harrisburg on Wednesday noon to one to show your support. I think it's worth doing. It's a great thing.
We will all be cheeseheads.
Yes, we are all cheeseheads for this week, except for the people who are still angry at the Packers. And yes, I do kind of like needling that in there a little bit. But you know, I look at this, and you know, people say, why do you need a contract? Why is it that we need this thing called collective bargaining? And I always, anytime I hear someone talk about, you know, contracts or collective bargaining, I always go to the other side. I say, well, why do CEOs need contracts? Why do people who sit on boards of directors, why do to these bigwigs need contracts? Why did Robert Nardelli need a contract? Former CEO of Home Depot, currently the CEO of Chrysler. But when Robert Nardelli was at Home Depot, he was doing a crummy job, horrible job. Shareholders were angry. Board of directors was angry. You know what they did? They fired him. They said, there's the door. Get out. Oh, but wait a minute. Don't go too fast. Here's a check for $210 million. I got to be honest. Every job I've been fired from, I get there's the door. Don't let it hit you where the good Lord splits you.
No, I'm shocked. I thought they would give you a certificate of achievement as you walked out the door, right? Didn't happen?
I look at Nardelli. How do I get a gig like that? I'll quit tomorrow. Fire me, please. Oh, come on. I'll start day one. I'll do everything you can do to have you fire me. If you're going to hand me a check for $210 million? But we're merit-based people. And that's the other thing that the simple minds like to say. Oh, we believe in merit-based pay. Who decides the merit? Where does that come from? Robert Nardelli? Was that merit-based? He failed. Share price plummeted. Shareholders not happy. Board of directors even less happy. They fired him. But yet in the world of merit-based, he got a check for $210 million.
I do believe they call that a golden parachute.
No, that's a platinum chute. Geez Louise. I mean, maybe cab fare, I get that. Maybe validate his parking, I get that. $210 million? But they're telling you, the working stiff, well, you don't need that contract. No, you need to be an at-will employee so we can fire you at our will. And that's the thing that gets me. And I've yet to have one of these hollow-headed, vacant-eyed conservatives call me and say, well, you know, I sure do like the fact that I go to work every day and the boss can fire me at his will. I've yet to hear one person say that. Not one. And you ask, why are these people in Madison, Wisconsin, fighting so hard to maintain their voice on the job? That's the reason, man. They don't want to come in tomorrow and say there's the door. They want to have some security. They want to have some say in how things are done. It's that simple. Anyway, Monday night we will be live from Madison, Wisconsin. We're looking forward to the event. Again, if you missed any portion of the program this evening, you can download it from our site at thericksmithshow.com. Again, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, if you've got any suggestions. Where's a good place to eat in Madison, Wisconsin? What should we see? That kind of stuff while we're there. And hey, if you're in Madison, send us an email. We'd love to talk to you.
Look us up even
better. Until Monday night, have a great weekend. Be good. And we will see you from Madison, Wisconsin, Monday night. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the little sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
They're stealing down on Wall Street and Washington, too. You know, it makes me wonder